welcome to RFN episode 396. I'm your host, James Jones. With me today...
Dude, it's not RFN, man. It's not RFN. This is the NFL preview show, man. I don't know what you're talking about.
You told me it was the Lords of Thundercast that you've been teasing me about for 7 years or whatever.
Apparently, we've been told different things, Craig, because I think you need to...
All right. Chill. All right, so I've been drinking very heavily the last 7 hours.
7 weeks.
I may have made some promises I can't... Fuck it. All right, NFL. We're talking about the NFL. I don't... Whatever.
He's already gone Corso on us.
Yeah, I mean, things are out of hand. I am just going to concede. Greg, with no preparation whatsoever, I think you can lead an NFL podcast.
Well, it's a push. You know, I've got to have to become interested in it somehow. I know
as an Englishman, you've probably only seen American football once or twice or whatever.
I'm a bit of an amateur, but I'm going to have to, you know, to try and see if my research skills are up to par here.
That's fine. I'm going to go throw up dinner, and you guys, you guys take the reins. I'll be back in about 5 minutes.
Well, I tell you, if you told me last year, you know, that we'd be back here a year later doing another NFL preview show, I would have said that was about as likely as Rex Ryan and Jason Garrett both missing the playoffs but keeping their jobs. And yet, here we all are.
We are predictable as NFL firings.
So, we're back to preview another NFL season. I must just give an important bit of context here that we're recording this on August the 19th. So, by the time it goes out, there may have been further knee tears or God knows what that completely sabotage all predictions straight away. I would say that all facts are correct as of that day, but that would be way over-promising. So,
I simply promise that this podcast will end at some point. Beyond that, I make no promises.
Yeah, you'd hope so, wouldn't you? We'll begin, though, by recapping how badly or not last year's predictions worked out. I think it's important, you know, because last year we just sort of said, well, RFM, we can't predict anything at all, we're terrible. So, you know, basically you could just go and bet against everything we're going to predict here. We just had to assume we'd be bad. But now we actually know how bad we are, and you can just hear this and then think, okay, well, apply the sort of margin of error to what we say this year in some sort of magic sort of statistical matrix, and then you will be able to predict the NFL season yourself. So this time last year, we picked which teams would be going into the NFL playoffs, and we picked who would ultimately be playing in the Super Bowl. So James, first up, had 6 of the 12 playoff teams correct.
Hey!
Five in the correct spots in terms of who would be a division winner and who would be a wild card. John had 8 and 5 in the right spots. Mm-hmm. And I also had 8 with 7 in the right spots. Although I have to issue one caveat here, which is if the NFL had correctly officiated a field goal in a Week 17 game between the Chiefs and the Chargers, the Steelers would have been in the playoffs, and me and James would have had 1 extra each. So, you know, it's the NFL's fault.
Anything to keep Ben out of the playoffs, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, maybe so.
I feel like we're just one locked bathroom door / motorcycle accident away from him being a burnout. So anything to get him closer to the offseason to give us that opportunity, go for it.
I could have been batting 75%, people.
It's true.
They
could have been.
They took that away from me.
I could have been batting like 55, so
you could have been over 50. That would have been a nice moral victory. But in the Super Bowl picks department, James had, imagine this, Seattle over Denver.
Oh.
He actually predicted the teams in the Super Bowl with the correct result. I don't think he predicted the ridiculous scoreline, though.
You sure didn't go, I see Denver getting just the shit stomped out of them by the end of the first quarter.
That was ridiculous. It was like a flashback to my childhood. It was very traumatic. And so John was about as close to being right as he could have been without actually being right, because he had San Francisco over Denver. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that pass falling incomplete instead of into Richard Sherman deflecting it into someone's hands.
Yep.
For Seattle. You know, San Francisco might have gone on to win that game and presumably would have won the Super Bowl against
Denver. Yeah, obviously the Broncos weren't prepared, so...
It did not seem like they were quite good enough for the NFC's best. In a throwback to the old days, the AFC being nowhere near as good. And then myself, I also had Seattle over Denver. So imagine that. For all the promises of being wrong, we actually, two of us had the correct result in the Super Bowl, and we all had the correct AFC participant. But then I guess we couldn't you know, lose, could we? Because we'd either be right about being wrong. Or just be right.
Or just straight up right, at which point we're wrong about being right.
Exactly. Hmm. And I thought the last thing I'd get out of the way before we move into the preview proper is just like the teams that we were the most wrong about in general. So the biggest overestimation of teams,
I picked out
three teams that we just missed on big time. First one is the Houston Texans, who... It was all looking fine when they were 2-0.
But yeah.
15 weeks later, they were
2-14. The pick sixes started. They were 2-0 most of the way through the season at 2-0.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Those were the good old days. And then... Schaub
did crumbled big time, and that they ended up with the number one pick. So, yes, kind of the unanimous decision to elect them as AFC South winners was not correct. The also unanimous decision to make Washington did not pan out. They also fell far down the standings.
The Washington professional football team did not succeed at being a professional football team.
Mission not accomplished.
But they also didn't get the joy of the high draft pick because of the Griffin trade,
I don't want to talk about that either.
And then finally, Atlanta, we missed on. I think this is probably the most forgivable because there was the most misfortune involved.
They were absurdly injured. They lost Roddy White, Julio Jones, Steven Jackson, Sam Baker, Sean Weatherspoon. The list goes on and on and on.
I feel like John has this dream in his night, like every night.
I wake up screaming.
I've been there. It's horrible.
Well, the worst thing about it was that literally every single week, it was like another player went down. You know, and they've already had two of the same guys go down this year. So,
as we kind of said in last year's preview, NFC is very tough. So it's not a very sort of comforting place to be when you're really thin because of injuries. You know, there's not many easy games to get you a few. It was hard to imagine that would happen to Atlanta because they'd only, you know, the lowest they'd ever had with Matt Ryan was 9 wins. It was really hard to imagine they could go as low as 4 wins, but you know, I don't think it was really because the team was that much worse than we thought it was. It was just that, you know, there were some sort of areas where they were thin, and then they got injured at those as well as others. So it was a very unfortunate season. But on the flip side of that, I do want to make special mention of the biggest underestimation of a team, which would have to be the Arizona Cardinals, who I think we all thought would be really hopeless because they had such a terrible offensive line.
Oh, their 2012 team was...
The offensive line was... I mean, the defense was good that year, but the offensive line was so horrible, and they play in the NFC West, where you've got Seattle, San Francisco, and... St. Louis has an excellent defensive line. All these terrible matchups for such a bad offensive line to face. You just think Carson Palmer, no spring chicken. He's going to be getting sacked a million times. He still did get sacked quite a few times.
He did get sacked a million times.
As it turned out, huge credit to Bruce Arians last year in terms of just getting the offense to be functional enough to complement what was a sterling defense, best run defense of the league, won 10 games, missed out on the playoffs because of how good the NFC is, but they were far, far better than I ever would have imagined. That was a tremendous coach of job.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Funnily enough, he won Coach of the year before with the Colts because he had to step in for Chuck Pagano who had cancer, but I think he probably deserved it more with Arizona in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you looked at that team and you said, well, their 2012 team got sacked before the ball got snapped. I mean,
it was ridiculous. But the funniest thing about it is they drafted on the line to help. But I think Cooper, their top pick that they dedicated the offensive line last year, was injured in preseason for the year.
Yes.
So I mean, that was like the nail in the coffin. And yet, still, they did what they did. Very, very impressive.
Very impressive. we'll see if we think they're going to hold
they
that
up. They actually beat Seattle in Seattle.
Yeah, that's insane. Yeah. Beating Seattle in Seattle is nuts.
That's
yeah.
like the win of the year in many ways, because no one had done it in years, and no one did it after that either in the playoffs.
Yep.
With that, so to give you, we've given you an idea of our margin of error. We now move into this year's... the other thing I kind of decided after looking at the tape from last year was that best to leave the best to last with the NFC. We're going to start with the weaker conference, the AFC, which just that was something we were right about by the end of the year. So this year we'll build up as we go and start with the AFC, and as customary, start with the AFC East. And another little change to the format, I think I'm going to get picks from each of us before we actually go into a detailed discussion of the teams, just to see if then any of us are swayed by the conversation that takes place after that, to perhaps change our picks. So AFC East, I take it we're all taking New England on this one.
Yeah, I mean,
who else is there? I will never ever choose a Rex Ryan team in my entire life. It's never happening.
I mean, John,
still bitter about Bundy, isn't it?
John's concern about Ryan is valid. I think the Jets themselves, they haven't solved their quarterback problems. I mean, we're only a year and a half removed from butt fumble. I mean, we're not.
There's still mutated birds being born because of the butt fumble.
We haven't solved the problem there.
We will be getting to each of the other teams.
Sure. I mean, I just think it's the Patriots, because I can't find anybody else to go, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and take a chance on this.
No, mm-hmm. I think it's a fair point, because if you look last year, the Patriots suffered all sorts of misfortunes, and yet ultimately they were able to win the division. Obviously, it's credit to Belichick and Brady and the whole team to get through
this is
all
killing
the
you, isn't
injuries
it?
Yeah. and all that.
I can almost smell the bile coming up in Greg's throat.
But at the same time, it's also a function of the fact that the other teams just aren't good enough to take it from them. Even though they did actually lose to the Jets and they lost to the Dolphins once, it wasn't like they went 6-0 in the division, it's still, I think, it was a division with better teams. Maybe somebody could have taken it off them, but
it's a
it wasn't last year.
The other
and
teams
it probably,
just lacked it.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think that, and it looks to be the same way this year. So I think we'll sort of shelve a discussion of the Patriots in detail for a bit later on when we decide who's actually going to win the AFC, because I think we all agree that they're very much in the mix. And so let's now look at the other teams in the AFC East to get a sort of handle on what their prospects are. And I want to start with the Jets and Rex
Ryan. How
does
Rex Ryan still have a job?
It is amazing. But I got to be honest, I'm glad he's still here, because I think the NFL is a much duller place without people like Rex Ryan. These days, NFL head coaches are such automatons, so completely uninteresting and uncharismatic. Rex is a treasure to me.
That's the thing. See, my only wish is that the Cowboys would hire Rex Ryan, so Jerry Jones, Rex Ryan, and Rob Ryan on the same team.
John, the
that
NFC
would be amazing.
Fantastic. Unfortunately, the NFC East can't handle that.
Unfortunately, Rob with the Cowboys didn't really go that well years ago. But look, to be serious about the Jets, I've got really mixed feelings about them this year, because in many ways, 8-8 was a big overachievement last year from what people thought, because you had a situation where your Geno was probably going to play, and then Mark Sanchez got injured, so that became a certainty. And the book on Geno, even for people who kind of liked him as a prospect, was that he was raw, it would take a while, and they didn't really have a lot on offense anyway, so it was kind of like, oh god, this is going to be ugly. So to go 8-8 under that circumstance, now I'm still surprised he kept his job, because it is still another playoff miss to make 3 in a row.
Right.
So normally you don't survive that. So I'm kind of impressed with the Jets in a way to show this kind of patience. But on the other hand, I think there's something a little deceptive about that 8-8 record, because if you look at the net points, for instance, their net points is a lot worse than the Bills, who were 6-10.
Because they had some catastrophic games.
They had horrible games. I mean, there was a huge difference between them at home and on the road. Because you look at home, they beat the Patriots. They beat the Saints. Yeah, so it's like, oh, well, this is, you know, you're beating real, you know, teams, great quarterbacks. On the road, they got annihilated by Tennessee and by Buffalo. I mean, it's, you know...
It makes no sense. Defies
logic.
Well,
I think it's got a lot to do with Geno. The fact is that, you know, away, when the communication's more difficult, the pass rush is more fierce with the crowd noise, all that kind of stuff, it just, the wheels came off at times, the turnovers racked up, and it gave them and also their own defense is going to be less effective on the road because you don't have those things.
He had some terrible games.
No, he had awful games, especially on the road, and that's why they were so, and I think the problem is that, you know, I could imagine them being better this year, Geno himself being better, and of course they have Michael Vick as well to go to if Geno does not improve, although then there's a question of like, well, can Michael Vick stay healthy if he's needed? Because, you know, he's been such an injury risk. But I think the problem I've got is that they could be quite a lot better away and still be a long way away from winning those games. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, yeah, great. You didn't get blown out by Buffalo this year. You just lost by 10. You know, like, that's still not good enough to get above 500 to get in the playoffs. That's my fear.
Because for whatever reason, CBS had a real boner for showing Jets games. And we ended up seeing a bunch of Jets games in the early time slot, like the 1 o'clock games. And I remember sitting through a bunch of games that were just cataclysmic. And even when they were at home and winning, you watched it and thought, how the hell are they winning this game?
No, well, there was the first game of the season last year. They were playing the Bucks, who of course had a miserable season.
They
just basically gave the Jets a game on a bizarre defensive penalty, like I think it was unsportsmanlike conduct or whatever, that put them in field goal range. They had absolutely no business winning that game. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, there's just no doubt. I think that 8-8 was flattering on them. Just, you know, because they won close games in weird ways, but then they'd get murdered. Yeah, sometimes they look every bit as bad as the pessimists thought they might be last year. And then other times, to be fair, they did look, you know, pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, when they lost, they got crushed. Like, 38-13 against Tennessee. 49-9 against the Bengals. They lost 49-9.
That's, yeah, I mean, that is...
37-14 against the Bills. And then even when they didn't, when it wasn't a score fest, they lost 19-3 to Baltimore, 23-3 to Miami. I mean, they looked bad.
If they played anybody with half-decent defense away, it was pretty much over. And I just feel like that's the thing. It's like, yeah, they might not be that awful this year in that regard, but I still don't feel like they're going to be good enough to win enough games to really challenge for the division. A wild card's not out of the question because, I mean, they were a game out of it last year. So how can you say it's out of the question, you know? Like, the AFC...
I just think 8-8 is... 8-8 would be an accomplishment. And that sounds terrible for a team that's missed the playoff for 3 years, but I just don't see that they've made strident gains that say, okay, this team should be better than they were last year.
Well, I mean, they've got Eric Decker coming in from Denver in the wide receiver position, which I think, you know, is an upgrade. The cupboard's been a bit bare in the passing game for a while there. Although I'm always hesitant with players that come from those super productive offenses that have the great quarterbacks. Like, how much impact are they going to make on the team?
Peyton Manning ain't throwing those passes this year.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, look, if he was Decker play, you know, he seems gifted and all that, but it's still, put him in the context of a totally different offense, it's a bit of a worry. But I mean, it's easy to say, you know, you look at last year, say 8-8, and then, well, hey, even if Geno's terrible, you could put put Michael Vick on last year's team. You'd think they'd be in the playoffs, right? Because they only needed to win one more game.
Yeah.
And that has some validity for me, but it's just... I personally think that's covering up some deficiencies. That record's flattering. So I'm not sure that they will get a wild card berth, but it's still within the realms of possibility. Miami, on the other hand, is an interesting one because they really should have been in the playoffs last year in many ways. I mean, they blew it big time.
Yeah, well, they started out on fire, like 3-0.
3-0, and you know, again,
the win at Indy and versus Atlanta, and then Atlanta before the injury menagerie.
Yeah, that was
setting.
Yeah, it was before it was obviously the Georgia Dome had been so difficult to win games in with Matt Ryan and all that kind of stuff. You know, so I mean they did start off well when you consider that the winning post ended up being 9-7, you know, and they were 3-0 and they were 8-6 and had the Bills and the Jets to finish the season and they couldn't get it done. You know, that looks like a catastrophic failure, doesn't it? You know, and people will focus on Tannehill, who, you know, didn't have a terrible season, but the real issue for me is just that the offensive line completely collapsed. And, of course, that ties into the big news story of last year for Miami, which was the whole Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin thing.
Yeah,
which
was just a debacle.
I mean,
obviously, it was a very embarrassing situation for them. It was bad PR, but it affected them on the field because it took out two starters from the offensive line. Martin was playing tackle. Incognito is playing guard.
Right.
40% of your offensive line gets taken out in this one incident.
I mean, you look at their games where they achieved, and just at the Jets specifically, I think they've had like 330 yards passing. And you think, wow, that's a really impressive number. They must have had really great protection. And then you rest, the Jets just weren't there. But Greg will remember this game. Their 19-0 loss at Buffalo. I want to say Tannehill had like 80 yards passing.
No,
yeah,
I mean, I think they
had 82.
It was pitiful.
And their rushing game was like, what, 10 yards? I mean, it was.
By the way, and 8 yards rushing.
The Bills,
well,
believe
total.
It or not, were,
the high rusher was Miller with eight.
The Bills, believe it or not, were actually one of the worst run defenses in the league last year. But the reason why that they struggled in some of these games that against teams that you would think, I mean, the Bills actually swept the Dolphins, and in both of those games we had essentially a third string quarterback, Thad Lewis, playing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, how the hell
you
can
had
this
a
team,
Duke quarterback playing?
How the hell can this team lose? How can Miami lose to the Bills twice like that? And it's a matchup problem, because one thing that the Bills have is a very good defensive line. There's three Pro Bowlers on that team.
They were great.
And they had a terrible offensive line. It just the matchup, it just killed them. And the thing is, this year, you look at Miami, and of course, they've tried to overhaul that unit because it was so terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And the one sort of big money signing to kind of anchor it is Brandon Albert, who was franchised last year by the Chiefs. So, I mean, that's something. But, you know, a lot of the rest of the line is still kind of totally up in the air. And then the one kind of player that they had to build around, Mike Pouncey, at centre, is injured perhaps for the first 4 to 6 games, something like that. And it looks like it's going to be difficult for them to correct that problem. And the AFC East has still got some good defensive front.
And they still had to replace those two players they lost, effectively.
Yeah, exactly. It's really difficult, especially when Sherman, the old Green Bay coach that was their coordinator, has kind of carried the can for that. And now you've got a new offensive coordinator coming in, Bill Lazor, who I think he's coming from Philly. You know, so they might be looking to run sort of up tempo. So, you know, so you've got a scheme change, all this kind of stuff. We're in a situation where Philbin is, you know, this is do or die for him. Realistically, if he doesn't win this year, he's out. Everyone's gone. So it's really high pressure. I think, like, Tannehill, I'd like to see him play behind a decent line.
Well, it'll be interesting how the Pouncey injury affects him, because that will affect, I mean, one of the crucial things is getting that snap down between, you know, getting that handoff. And Tannehill's going to be out in there.
If you're running this up-tempo type of offense.
Yep.
It's all got to be like clockwork, hasn't it? And then, so that's a big blow for them.
I mean, he had a couple games where he looked competent.
Tannehill's had good games, and like I say, he's never had very many advantages in the receiver department, in the offensive line department. You know, so it's difficult to know. You know, if you gave him, but maybe some quarterbacks are almost sort of have a comparative advantage in dealing with chaos. You know, and then when you give them a good offense, they don't make the most of it as much as another quarterback do. But I'd like to see if Tannehill could, but I don't think he's going to get that this year.
I just don't see enough improvement where they needed it. They needed some better receiving, but mostly they need to protect him.
Well, I mean, they put, but the thing is, on the receiving point, they paid big money to Mike Wallace last year. and that was a stinker in terms of his impact last year. That he didn't do a lot. But, you know, again, if the kind of receiver that he is, you need better protection to, you know, let him stretch the field. To actually,
he needs to get downfield. Essentially, what he
brings to what he brings to the party. So again, that's another limiting factor there. But I mean, the defense was good last year. I fully expect it'll be pretty good this year. So I think they'll be hovering around there again. And the bar isn't that high in the AFC, so a wild card's not out of the question for me. But I don't see them pushing the Patriots for the division either. And then there's the Bills to finish off, which the first thing I'll just say, I'm glad the off-season's almost and pre-season's almost over, because it's been the worst one I've ever known as a Bills fan. The first thing it started off is like, we lost our defensive coordinator, who was one of the bright spots of the team, to Cleveland for their head coach job. It's like, we should never lose a coordinator from a 6-10 team in their first year. You know, like, that's only because Cleveland mishandled that whole thing so badly that no one else wanted the job. Did that happen? We lost Jarris Bird in free agency. We lost Kiko Alonso, our best rookie from last year, to a knee tear before camp even began. And oh yeah, the owner died, and now we might get bought by John Bon Jovi or Donald Trump.
Oh, so, God, I want Donald Trump's own an NFL team so bad.
Fantastic.
It's been a trying time for Bills fans. And that's not even thinking about how good or not they're going to be on the field this year.
Of course,
year,
you mean the Toronto Bills, don't you, Greg?
Yeah. No, if Trump buys them, though, they won't be. They'll be in Jersey over at
Atlantic City.
Welcome to the Atlantic City Bills.
If Trump buys them, it'll be huge.
Jesus.
I mean, he managed a USFL team so well.
Yeah, so well, yeah, he just ran the whole league into the ground. Yeah, didn't even just kind of go to the extent of his own team. Yeah, it make Snyder and Jerry Jones at their worst look restrained and football.
We can compete
savvy
against the NFL with our product. No, you can't. Stop.
Please,
yeah, just stop.
So, yeah, I mean, it's almost a bit different because the ownership stuff is really kind of coming to a head now. You know, a couple of weeks from now, the bids are going to come in and then we'll know who the owner's going to. It does look good, actually. It looks like the ridiculously wealthy owner of the Buffalo Sabres will probably end up with the team.
Oh, yeah, he's...
But, you know, if you're a Bills fan in this sort of situation, you're not so much always waiting for the other shoe to drop as you are waiting for the other shoe to kick you in the nuts.
He's a good owner.
I'm not counting any chickens.
As an NHL fan, he's a good owner. I mean,
and he's yeah, he's ridiculously wealthy.
He's rich.
This is Ted Leonisis or whatever, right?
No, Terry Pegula.
No, Ted Leonsis is the owner of the Wizards and the Capitals.
Okay.
Yeah, Pegula is very wealthy because of fracking and stuff, you know, oil and gas. And, he's sold about $1.75 billion worth of development land before the Bills process took. So he's got liquidity, as they say.
Yeah.
And if he buys the team, presumably they are safe for quite a while. So we're all looking forward to that. It's quite difficult to kind of think about on the field. And if you're wondering why somebody who lives thousands of miles away cares about this, that is, I could not support them if they moved.
You're not excited about the Atlantic City Bills?
No, for me, the team that I fell in love with, there was a lot of things that I liked about them when you were a kid. For facile stuff, I liked the kits, I liked the up-tempo offense. Obviously, they had really good players, of course, that went, a lot of them ended up in the Hall of Fame. But yeah, the crazy fans in that really cold place, tearing down the goalposts when they won the division, that was a big part
of
it too. You know, and that's the only thing that's left of that team. You know, because everybody else is retired, and so if you take them out of Buffalo, it's not my team anymore. Even if I've only ever been there once.
Yeah, it was I had a friend who was a diehard Houston Oilers fan, and when they left Houston, he was just like, I don't really care about them anymore because they're just some other team now.
They're just laundry at that point.
Yeah,
even they kept the Oilers name at first. Yeah, they were the Tennessee Oilers for a while.
Yeah,
but before they were the Tigers.
Thank you, Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah. I will be relieved when that whole thing's wrapped up. On the field, you know, it's really, you know, it's kind of an easy thing to say, but it's just so much about how well EJ Manuel plays at quarterback, because they've got enough in other areas that I feel like good quarterbacking can elevate them to playoff status in the AFC.
They had a great rushing attack, really good pass defense. Their rushing defense was terrible.
Rush defense was terrible. Some of that you can blame on the offense a little bit in terms of if we held the ball more and created more leads, you couldn't keep running on us,
Yeah.
You could take teams out of that. I mean, it's incredible that the Bills set a franchise record for sacks when they didn't have the lead that often.
It shows you how potent
the pass rush was.
Their pass defense was really good, too.
The secondary had a lot of picks, which again is how did you get so many picks when you weren't blowing apart from that one game against Geno, they weren't blowing anybody out. So it's which is often how teams rack up picks, in a big way. So you feel like, if we had a good quarterback to go with the rush offense, which is good. I mean, rush offense is interesting because it was second overall just behind Philly in number one. But people say, oh yeah, but if you look at average, they were only 14th. And it's like, well, let me get this straight. This is a team that everybody knew was going to run because we had Thad Lewis and Jeff Toole playing half the games at quarterback.
He's the pride of Duke University.
And a rookie recovering from knee injuries at all the other games. And we still average 14th in yards per carry. That's pretty damn good.
Really good.
I think there's things to work with there, but at the same time, I don't feel like the team is good enough that if you don't have good quarterbacking, they can overcome it the way that some teams have in the past. It really is all on him, and I just don't have a read on it at all, because last year he played 10 games, they were 4-6 in those games, he had some good ones, he had some poor ones. Bit similar to Geno, who's quite a lot worse on the road, got sacked a lot more on the road, which was, I think, partly the offensive line, partly him holding it onto the ball too long. But the thing about it is that he got injured in preseason, he got injured twice in the regular season, so he's always coming back from injury, and he was always inexperienced, and he only played 10 games. It was the most vexing kind of season you could have. In some ways, it would almost be better if he was terrible. So he's just like, okay, move on. All right, I've seen enough.
I look at that team, and I was thinking about this division, I thought, have I drank enough today to say this team's going to beat the Patriots and take this division?
No, you have not. You could still form complete sentences.
I look at that team and I say, of all of the teams in that division who have a ceiling that exceeds where we think they can go, from a talent standpoint, I think they have the highest ceiling if you exclude the Patriots. I think of the three other teams, they are potentially the best of the three.
I think the big thing for me is how good will the defense be this year? Because on the one hand, it was good last year, but there's so many changes. Obviously, we lost the coordinator. Mm-hmm. And we got Jim Schwartz as an accomplished defensive coordinator, former Lions head coach. But it's a different scheme. And then we lost Jairus Byrd to the Saints in free agency. We've lost Kiko Alonso, was a huge hit as a rookie at linebacker. So it's like, is that actually, are you going to get those turnovers and picks anymore? And sacks?
Yeah.
That's a big
the
question.
Offense the offense needs to do more this year.
It does need to do more. Sammy Watkins, of course, they traded up to get, so he better be good in some ways. But I don't want to say, if he's not that great in his rookie year, it's obviously a terrible move. The receivers sometimes do take a while to develop, and then other times they can be. I don't think the Bengals would be where they are today without AJ Green.
No.
He's been a huge center because Dalton has been good for them, broadly speaking. But without AJ Green, it's hard to imagine that it would have been that kind of success. And I think that's what they're looking for with Sammy Watkins. But, again, when you don't know if EJ's going to be good enough to make use of him, it's difficult to say that that's going to propel them. So I see the Bills as being a team that's in the mix, especially because the schedule is soft early. So they can hang around. They can be relevant. And then it's just like, can they? It gets tough later on, so they might end up looking like they faded away when actually they played teams that are actually any good at the end. I think they'll be in the mix, but it's important that they start fast because you can't afford to lose those games to teams that you should beat You know, that's the thing. If they lose those games early on, even if they improve at the end, it might be too late. So that's how I see them be. It really, you know, Miami, the Jets, the Bills, I see them all being pretty similar. They've all got good things about offense, good things about their defense, question marks on offense, although albeit different ones in some cases. And so none of them you think can challenge the Patriots, and but they could all be close to a wild card. But I wouldn't be confident enough to say any of them will get one.
Yeah, I would say of the three, the Bills have the most, if you were to say where they're going to be, there's the biggest range.
I agree with that, because I just feel like, you know, the number of years that Rex has been there at the Jets, it's a bit more of a known quantity. You know,
I mean, the Jets should be the 8-8 New York Jets before the season starts. That should just be their name.
It's a decent chance, though, because he'll always get the defense pretty good, even if the personnel has not been as good. You know, they've lost Revis and stuff like that. You know, they haven't had the same level of cornerback play, and that's really important to that kind of defense. But they were still 11th last year, despite a terrible offense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a certain amount of consistency there that you expect. The Dolphins, I think, I mean, we know what they are. We know what that Dolphins team is. They're not extremely different from last year's Dolphins team.
I think we know what the problem is as well. It's just, and I mean, with offensive line, it's a weird thing, because sometimes it can look like a problem area, and you know, all these like new parts come in. It's kind of like, oh god, you know, it's good, and it could be better than you think. I mean, I always remember Matt Ryan's rookie year in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And people said it's going to be like Derek Carr at the expansion Texans.
Oh, God.
Yeah, because the line was really bad under Petrino the year before, and they came in, it was totally new. You know, and they drafted Sam Baker in the first round, but it wasn't like they had, you know, some stud top five pick to come in and all that. You know, so it was all kind of cobbled together. And it was pretty good.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and they went 11-5.
Yeah, know? I mean, so it was the same thing when Peyton Manning went to the Colts. I mean, the Colts offensive line was terrible the year Peyton Manning went to that team. But then, you know, they got a new offensive line coach, and, you know, I mean, they were really good. You just never know.
Because it's such a unit, you know, of those five people, you know, it can get better in a hurry and it can get worse in a hurry. And it isn't always about drafting, you know, guys in the top 10 or signing guys to big money contracts. So I'm not going to say they can't resolve that. It's perfectly plausible to me, but I'm not particularly expecting it. But I think we've given enough to the AFC East, so now we'll move on to the AFC North. And first of all, our picks for the division, our provisional picks for the division winner here.
I pick sickness. I look at this division and go, fuck, I don't know.
Yeah, this is more difficult than New England AFC.
I am picking the Bengals only because they are the only team that actually have a decent quarterback and a decent wide receiver on the same team.
Yeah, but isn't their their entire coaching staff different at this point?
The Steelers. I don't know.
The Steelers got Ben and Antonio Brown, you know, and the Ravens' receiving options are actually getting better. But
those teams are all aging, though. You know what I mean? Like those teams seem like they're past their prime.
I mean, Ben Roethlisberger is what, like 38 years old? And
well, his body is probably that old.
He's probably
old
locked in the bathroom right now at a college bar. I mean, what are we doing?
He's crashing
his motorcycle in a college bar bathroom right now.
Through a combination of bad line play and the fact that he is willing to take chances holding the ball, you know, he has taken a beating over the life of his career.
Last 2 years. I mean,
it's been bad. Because they've had really bad luck as well. You know, in terms of they drafted DeCastro in the first round to play guard for them to shore up the line. I think 2 years ago, he got injured in the preseason, never played in his rookie year. Last year, Marquise Pouncey, their Pouncey that's really quite good on the offensive line, he got injured in the first regular season game, didn't play the rest of the year. So, you know, they've been trying to fortify this interior offensive line for years now, and it's just not been happening. This year, you know, they seem like they can actually do that if there isn't any more bad luck. And don't forget, last year they actually started 0-4, wasn't it? And then they got
something
back to 8-8. They got back to 8-8 was they kind of adjusted to some of those injuries. I think Larry Foote was another one that missed the entire season, basically. And, you know, were pretty good at the end and would have made the playoffs if it hadn't been for that bad call, as I mentioned before. So I don't feel like I want to rule them out, because it's similar to the Jets, isn't it? If they were 8-8 with all that last year.
I mean, so
if we assume they're less, you know, unlucky this time.
Let's just say anybody but the Browns is fair game at this point.
No, you see, I know we'll talk about the Browns, but you know, there's plenty to like about the Browns in many ways. It's just obviously the huge uncertainty about the quarterback position. Where you know, yeah. we've had two preseason games. It feels like we're no closer than knowing.
It's a preseason game. I get that. I watched the Browns last night and wanted to vomit all over my living room. I mean, it was it was horrific.
But it's preseason, yeah. I mean, Brandon Weeden was lighting it up in preseason last year, and we saw how that ended up. But
I never want to get NFL All-Star Brandon Weeden.
You don't want to get potential Cowboys quarterback if anything happens to Ryan Boy, which it usually does.
I mean,
the point with the Browns for me is, you look at the roster, I like lots of it. Even though they've been through all this turmoil with firing coaches, and you've gone from Holmgren to Lombardi, and now they've got another general manager. You know, it's been craziness with the new owner coming in and all that. But they have, you know, Joe Thomas left, probably the best pass protector in the league. They have Hayden, one of the best cornerbacks in the league. Mm-hmm. They have Josh Gordon, or don't they? That's the problem. Yeah. You know, Obviously, it's talked about a lot because of the suspension and all that might happen, which is ridiculous that we're doing this on the 19th of August, and we still don't know.
Seriously, this should be settled already. How long that suspension
is going to be, or not, right? So that is just ridiculous that we don't know that, and that they don't know that. You know, the team can't plan. Is it going to be 8 games? Is it going to be the full 16? But, I mean, it seems like it's going to be something pretty big. And that's a huge blow, because, I mean, like I said, people talk about him, but I don't think he gets enough credit for just how ridiculous his season was last year.
Yeah.
Because, bear in mind, he missed 2 games last year because of suspension, but then still topped everybody in receiving on a team that was regularly changing quarterbacks because of injury, and none of them were, you know, Tom Brady anyway. So to do what he did, I could only, the best sort of analogue I can come up with in my mind is sort of like Luis Suarez, he of the magnetic teeth for human flesh. In the Premier League last year, English football, he missed a big chunk of the season for biting someone the previous year, and still came back and outscored everybody, you know, and that's what Gordon did. It was incredible.
And so if
they had him coming back, you know, and didn't have so much bad luck with, you know, Hoyer was looking good, and then he tears his knee, and you know, they didn't want to play Whedon, but they ended up having to. You know, it just, they had a lot of bad luck. They lost ridiculous games, like the Patriots game they lost. They've
showing
the stat up on the screen. The Patriots have not recovered an onside kick in 20 years. What do you think happened?
Oh, I forgot about that. Oh God,
it was brutal to watch. That turned my stomach. It really did.
I mean, I saw that team last night. And yeah, it's a preseason game, but there just seemed to be disorder. And that's not, and
yeah,
that doesn't,
the general
that doesn't get
feeling
better.
With that
well,
team.
The problem is, it is another new coaching staff, and it's another new offensive coach. So if you've got Brian Shanahan, isn't it, coming in.
How many Shanahans are there?
They just keep breeding.
They've got Kyle Shanahan. I'm thinking of a different.
Oh, good.
I'm thinking of a different dynasty.
From the NHL,
there.
They got Brendan Shanahan.
I was thinking of a different coaching dynasty there, which is Brian Schottenheimer.
I was about to say, wait a minute, I don't remember Brian Shanahan.
Yeah. Kyle Shanahan is coming in now.
Is he just Kyle Shanahan with the fake mustache?
Up next, Scott Linehan. Coming in to play, call the plays.
I'm Bile Shanahan.
he's coming in, obviously. You know, and he had some, you know, obviously what they did in Washington.
Yes, what
zone
did they
reads.
Do in Washington?
Well, the year that they went to the place with Griffin,
yes.
Zone read, pistol formations, this kind of stuff. You know, Manziel
looked like garbage last night.
Well, he did look bad last night, but that could actually be a decent fit for his skills. I'm not that familiar with the Manziel fever. You know, I don't get to watch a lot of college football. I'm always a bit skeptical. These people are just huge college stars rather than they are great prospects for the NFL. VY, Tebow, you know, people yep. like that. But with Manta, I did see him play in the Chick-fil-A Bowl last year, which conjures all sorts of images of hallowed antiquity. I know, and it was a ridiculous game.
Those of us in the South still call that the Peach Bowl.
Yeah. Right, that sounds so much better.
It sounds much better because it makes us hungry if we hear the Chick-fil-A Bowl.
But the it was a game of college football, right? So there was loads of points, and it was madness, and they came from the Texas A&M came from way behind. But he did make, you know, throws in that game.
Oh, yeah.
That make you think, yeah, this guy, you know, like he could totally make the throws that a pro quarterback needs to make for all the other, you know, the stuff about him running around, and he almost like butt fumbled himself in that game. He sort of like sort of stepped up right into one of his own linemen, but then like didn't lose the ball and then threw for a touchdown or something. It was ridiculous. But, you know, I just feel like, you know, the Browns have things to work with, and this division is up for grabs. It's not out of the question.
Well, and that's the thing. That's exactly why I'm saying Bengals. They're like the only team that has actually had some sort of consistency.
Are we gonna call them Bengals consistency?
That's madness to even hear the words come out of my mouth.
They've beat to the playoffs 3 years in a row, and they've lost in the first round for 3 years.
I know.
Yeah, it's consistent. But,
I mean,
you can't argue with
the other teams in this division, though. I mean,
no.
There's no way Roethlisberger makes it through the season and plays every game.
Unless the offensive line is going to be a lot better when they have
there's no evidence to indicate that will happen. I
don't know. Like I said, you put Pouncey and DeCastro together, it could be better than it's been, but it's not necessarily a huge compliment to say that. And it is a tough division in terms of defense. You've got the Bengals is an excellent defense. The Ravens, I think, will be better this year because they had a very transitional type year last year where they lost loads of players. Mosley that they've drafted.
They had that post Super Bowl talent raid.
Yeah, and just, you know, they had to sign Flacco to the big contract, of course, and then that takes money away from signing other players that were out of contract. And so, you know, it's been a transition for them, but, you know, Ozzie Newsome, one of the best in the business when it comes to personnel. I think the Ravens are going to be getting better, but it's just a question whether this is going to be another kind of awkward transition year or whether they get better. I mean, on the Ravens, I think there's a couple of key things I want to talk about. First of all, they've got a new offensive coordinator sort of from the Shanahan tree, which is Gary Kubiak, of course. He used to be Shanahan's coordinator in Denver.
You're right.
When they won the Super Bowls with John Elway before he moved on to be the coach of the Texans for years. The one thing that Kubiak's offenses and Shanahan's tend to reflect is an outstanding running game.
Right.
You've seen it with any number of backs. We've had, you know, Clinton Portis, Terrell Davis.
Sheriff's going to get you.
Dr. Janky Spanky or whatever, all the other various names. Clinton Portis, Landis Gary had 1,000 yards in Denver, you know, and then of course with the Texans, you know, they had an excellent running game for years, and now he's coming into Baltimore where last year the run game was just unimaginably bad.
Extent, part of it was they just stopped trying at some point.
They did stop trying, and I mean, you have to say, you know, they must know it. So they must be bad in practice,
right? Because Ray Rice was really good just a few years ago.
He's apart from obviously Ray Rice's off the field transgressions, yes. I mean, as reprehensible as they are. He's obviously suspended for the first couple of games, but we know from the past he is a capable running back. That is not the limiting factor there.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, they didn't even really seem interested. It was a game last year against the Bills they played that the Bills ultimately won. It was a close game. I think they had about 20 yards rushing. Flacco threw 5 picks. You know, and I mean, again, I think John said earlier, the Bills had a bad run defense.
Yeah,
and yet and if they could have run for any amount of yards to reduce the number of pass attempts so that he wouldn't be throwing 5 picks, they win the game. And yet they couldn't do it. This abysmal running game, and yet they still went 8-8. And you get Kubiak coming in, who is that's his thing. I mean, that zone blocking type of skip, one cut running game that they've employed in Denver, in Houston, in Washington, and you've seen tremendous success. I have a hard time. Maybe they don't have the personnel to run it all that well yet. I'm not expecting miracles.
That's the open question, because I mean they employed it in Washington. It took them about a year.
Yeah, it wasn't in, but you look at them now. How good they've been at running the ball. You know, there's no doubt in my mind that I think Kubiak will make them better. And I expect them certainly. I mean, they could scarcely be worse. And I just think that's an important thing for them. I think because Flacco is a kind of quarterback. If you're just going to ask him to throw all the damn time, he's going to make mistakes.
Oh yeah,
right.
We've seen Tom Brady be immaculate without a running game. But there are many of those people. Flacco, we know, is good enough to take you deep into play
and
then win the Super Bowl.
The passing game so different in New England, where it's basically a surrogate running game. They're just long handoffs.
Yeah, there's a lot of short passes. There's a lot of up-tempo stuff. It's, obviously, New England offense is kind of a moving target because they let the personnel change so much. They don't re-sign people that much. They actually... let Wes Welker walk and whatnot. So they change... to whatever they need to be at any given moment. That's a testament to them. But I think Baltimore, they need a better running game than what they've had to be successful. But I think Kubiak will help give it to them. So I'm actually picking Baltimore to win the division. I think I like Cincinnati better as a team, but John brought up the salient point about them, which is the coaching situation. I think, James, you mentioned it, didn't you, actually? The two coordinators are both gone. Mm-hmm. That's on the offensive side, Jay Gruden. The defensive side, Mike Zimmer. And Marvin Lewis has been the head coach there for a very long time now. He's had quite a number of coordinators over that time, and what it's shown is that he depends on them. They have had
that I agree
inadequate coordination at times, and it has looked bad. Chuck Bresnahan running the defense, it was a bad defense. Even though Marvin Lewis was the coordinator of the Baltimore 2000 defense that gave up the fewest points ever, he doesn't guarantee a good defense by himself.
How many years was Marvin Lewis in Cincinnati?
He's been there since 2003, I believe.
That's a long time for a coach in one team.
Yeah, it is.
It is, and like I said, they've been through some refreshes from Carson Palmer to Dalton now, and offensively they were good with Carson Palmer at one point. They had some really sort of bad offenses over that. So like I said, they've been through coordinators. But Zimmer is the big one because since he got there, he came to Cincinnati in the fallout of the Petrino debacle.
Yep.
Because he was Petrino's defensive coordinator.
Oh, God.
And I will love Zimmer forever for the way he just totally dumped on Petrino for the way he handled that. He just threw, totally.
You're in the fine and classy, here's a note in your locker? Yeah.
I just love the way Zimmer totally, didn't like... be wishy-washy with that at all, just called it what it was, a disgrace. He went to Cincy, and straight away the defense got better. They became a playoff contended type of team, and I just think they've got good personnel on defense. And last year they lost key players like Geno Atkins and Leon Hall, who could come back this year. The defense could be better. It was still like fifth overall. I mean, it was a good defense even without some key players, but you take Zimmer away, I'm not sure it's going to be as good anymore. Some coordinators really make a difference. You saw that with Rob Ryan going into the Saints last year.
Yeah.
How ridiculously much better they got. And I think it works the other way. Take him away, and I'm not sure. I don't expect them to be bad, because I think the personnel is too good for that. But if you take the edge off a bit, I think this division is competitive enough for them to fall back.
And I think when you look at their stats from last year, they had six games, including an early game against the Steelers, if I recall correctly. So, I mean, they basically had five games where, their defense wasn't going to get much of a challenge. I mean,
no, it's true. You could talk about the fact that they played teams that didn't have the best offenses to go up against. The Baltimore, we've talked about their struggles.
Cleveland's offense was just...
Pittsburgh. Well, I mean, Cleveland's offense was surprisingly good at throwing the ball. Otherwise, Josh Gordon wouldn't have had the yards
he
had.
That's true. You're right.
Obviously, it wasn't a well-rounded unit. The running game was not good. And Pittsburgh, especially early in the season when they were still adjusted to the Pats, he lost, were pretty chaotic. So I think it's worth remembering that is the kind of thing, like putting the stats in context, in terms of the schedule that we probably return to with some other teams later on. But yeah,
this is a messy division.
It's going to be interesting because the first three games right out of the gate are the Bengals and the Ravens. Then the Ravens play Pittsburgh, and then the Ravens play Cleveland.
Wow!
What the hell does the schedule make?
I have no idea. They generally like to take all drama
out of this division immediately. Yeah,
they do like to put division games early and late. You know, yeah, I think some of it is because once you get in the middle of the season, you've got bye week issues. So it's like, oh, how could you let us play the Patriots where they've had an extra week to prepare? Like Bills fans bitch about that quite a lot, you know. So because it does happen to us a disturbing amount, to be fair. But
not that you're going to bitch about.
but they do generally try and avoid instigating that sort of complaint by putting them early and late when bye weeks aren't a factor, and also it creates some drama at the end. Of course, to have them at the end, it's why the NFC title game is an annual event,
right? But it can't take the piss out of a division because you can look at it and go, "Oh, these three teams are terrible." Like very very quickly, you get yardsticks to measure these teams, and you can say, "Ooh, that's." I mean, I think the AFC North will make a lot more sense after Week 4 than it does now.
No, it's true. It will give you something to go on at that point. But right, let's get final picks. As we couldn't get a consensus pick on this one, so there's nobody to just shunt into the playoffs straight away. But like I said, I am ultimately going with Baltimore, even though I don't feel like they've got in total as good a team as Cincinnati, maybe, but I'm going with Baltimore. John?
I'm going with the Bungles.
Bengals?
Great. The Bungles.
I don't know if it's just a straight up fear of their recent history, but I'm just going to roll with the Steelers and see what the fuck happens.
Yeah, those are all three valid picks.
I think Steelers, personnel wise, again, they have not got better personnel than Cincinnati. I don't believe that, but Dick LeBeau. Defense.
I mean,
you can never count them out. That's the thing. The Steelers, you can never count them out.
Last year's a great example. They had so many misfortunes, and yet they were still really competitive. So, I don't think we had three different winners of a division last year when we picked. So, there's more disagreement already. It's exciting. Let's move on to a division that presumably will not create so much division amongst us, which is the AFC South. Are we all picking Indy here?
Yeah, I mean...
which will presumably doom them to Houston Texans-type oblivion, but...
I think the Texans will be much improved. Jacksonville... I could see them winning maybe six games. I like Bortles. I could see them going like 6-10.
I think the important thing to think about Jacksonville is just how different the first half of the season was from the second half. You can look at 4-12 and think, oh yeah, that's what I expected from the Jags last year. But the first half of the season, they were 0-8, and they weren't just 0-8. Because that was they were getting blown out each and every week.
Some of those losses should have counted
twice. And that
whole
thing, the Denver game, where it was like the biggest spread in the history of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Denver were killing teams left, right, they pulled up the biggest points, and the Jags were getting murdered by anybody. So it was just ridiculous. I mean, it was as bad as we've seen. Yeah, it was worse than like the 0-16 Lions, because they actually lost a lot of close games.
Yeah.
Even though they ended up not winning one at all. But then the second half of the season, 4-4. And they were in quite a number of the games that they lost. So it was quite a dramatic turnaround. And so the joke was
they failed at tanking. Like they seemed to be tanking, and I said, "Actually, you know what? No."
Yeah, I mean, if it was a case that like the quarterback was definitely going to go number one, which kind of is what happened with the Luck here as well, doesn't it? Like, you know, they almost had Andrew Luck, but they didn't because the Colts were a little bit worse. But yeah, you know, like it's they ended up picking third. But of course, in the end, no one really expected a quarterback to go number one, and Bortles kind of went higher than some people thought. Mm-hmm. He might be. So, James, you say you like Bortles. I'm interested to hear. Again, all I saw of Bortles was one bowl game.
Right. I mean, I watched a lot of college.
I'd love to hear what you saw from him more generally.
On the weekend, and Bortles played at a college, doesn't get on TV as much. I mean, granted, every game is on TV at this point. But
sure, yeah.
I mean, I watched at least part of roughly 12 games of college a weekend. Now, that's not necessarily the whole game, but parts of it.
Parts.
And you know, Bortles played in a conference where you get these like weird Friday night games, and you get crazy games on like Wednesday night, where you're like, you know what? Yeah, I'm gonna watch a Wednesday night football game. I don't have a life.
It's football.
Yeah,
and it's all.
And
that's
and so I look back to oh crap, I'm blanking. 49ers quarterback. Kaepernick.
Oh, yeah, Kaepernick.
I look back to when I watched him in college at Nevada, and he played ridiculously dumb football. Just stuff that you're just like, this looks like it's a video game. This stuff doesn't make sense. You're just watching, you're like, all right, this is.
Yeah, he's just a really good athlete doing
this.
This
is the chaos
stuff
of the level of football they're playing. This isn't, you know, this isn't the Nick Saban level football. This is this level below it. And you're just like, all right, this is the nutso crazy football that happens at that next tier down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get these games where you're just like, yeah, sure, why not? I never had that with Bortles when I watched him. I watched it and said, this is a guy playing football at a high level. And I loved watching, you know, like Nevada play football because it was just dumb garbage pistol offense, 68-75. And you're just like, yeah, basketball scores, great. And I watched him play football and thought, you know what? This is a guy who's really good at the game of football. You know, he's not playing at a school where he's going to get a lot of attention, but he's making throws and he's reading.
No,
defenses.
I mean, that is what the game that I saw of Bortles, his postseason game, it was very much the sense I got is what people said about him in terms of this is the guy out of, you obviously had Bridgewater, he had Manziel. Some people would put Carr in the mix as well. He went
who threw for 100 billion yards last year. Because he played in one of those teams that, all right, we're not going to play defense. We're just going to score. Everybody who's a good athlete's on offense. Everybody else to fill scholarships on defense. Both teams are doing this. Let's score a million points.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, but he, Bortles, was the one who looked like the NFL prototype.
Right.
The size, the arm. You know, he looked the part. And obviously that can be kind of deadly sometimes.
Sure,
you know, cause
I mean,
because there's so much more to play in the game than just how big you are and how big your arm is and all that stuff. But, no, I mean, he looked like the kind of guy whose game could translate
right
to the pros. I mean, so far, again, it's preseason, but I think he's looked pretty good. It's looking like he's on course to maybe take the starting job a bit quicker than like Bridgewater in Minnesota, for instance, or Manziel.
I mean, when I watched him play, I'm used to watching that tier of football teams. You know, not the Big Five conferences; these conferences below that.
Was he in the MAC? Is that right? Or no, was he UCF?
He's so UCF, that was, so he was in the shoot. After all the conference realignment, I've forgotten. I want to say
American
Conference. That's it.
American Conference. Yeah, I remember because same school produced Culpepper, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm used to watching these teams just go. I mean, these teams just American to a lesser extent, but this is the same school that had Marshall that was running this offense. I was like, we're going to score 68 points. And we're not going to pass the ball. And you're just like, all right, fine, fuck it, I don't care. And you just watch.
No, I mean, I guess
he
the problem
in
is
control,
just that
is what it was.
The problem is that he looks like an NFL player, you know. But what is he playing against? You know, that's always the problem with the small school guys. It's not so much like, oh well, he's from a small school. How good, like some sort of snobbery thing. It's always the competition. It's always, you know, how much do you weight the tape that he produces,
right,
so to speak, against these sorts of players, you know, because it's, you know, people will say, like, when they go to the combine or whatever, oh, you're throwing against air and all that, you shouldn't put too much emphasis on that. But at the same time, you know, if you throw it in these huge, giant windows because nobody can cover or nobody can rush the passer, it's a similar problem. So I get why, you know, small school players sometimes can kind of slip through the cracks, but it looks promising at this point. And like I said, I think the Jags are clearly on an upward trajectory. Gus Bradley, the head coach, of course, was a major player in establishing the great defense that Seattle has. He's bringing over some of his guys from Seattle that they couldn't really re-sign, like Red Bryant and Chris Clemens. So I'm expecting the defense to get better, and I'm expecting them to, you know, do some interesting things with Bortles, but I find it hard to think that they're going to actually challenge for the division title at this point. That's probably, you know, a year or two away.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't think they'll be in the basement of this one, but
well, it's difficult because, you know, I also expect the Texans to improve.
Oh, so I think the Texans are going to be fucking horrible.
We'll move on to the Texans very shortly. I just want to say the biggest area for concern for the Jags, if you're looking for a reason why the Jags might be bottom of the division, it is, I need to keep doing this with certain teams, but offensive line wise, there are some big gaps. They've got some, you know, prominent players there, but at centre in particular, where I think their long-time centre like just retired or something, so it's just chaos there. And rush up the middle could be a big problem for a young quarterback. That wouldn't be a good thing. So that's the biggest hole I've got with them. But anyway, yeah, the Texans, will you tell me why you think they might be so bad?
Quarterback play, really. I just don't think
it's Fitz, and I guess I am the resident authority.
Yeah, I mean,
on Ryan Fitzpatrick,
he has looked terrible so far. I think they're going to have a really good defense, but that offense is just going to be awful.
Yeah, I mean, the defense—it's two. They were 2-14 last year, so you might think, "Well, how good could the defense be?" Well, it was actually pretty damn good.
It was.
You look at the
Clowney is a beast.
And yeah, you put Clowney on that. I mean, that is found money. To get a player of that defensive caliber onto a unit that already has J.J. Watt and company, I mean that is. And Crennel is the defensive.
How do you scheme for that if you're opposing offensive line?
I think Crennel is the defensive coordinator, and obviously he's had the checkered history as a head coach, but he's got a very solid resume as a coordinator. So yeah, I think defense. There aren't that many teams in the AFC that can play good defense, and most of them are teams that have quarterback issues, and I guess the Texans would potentially fit right into that profile.
My problem with the Texans quarterbacking situation is I just, whenever somebody says Ryan Fitzpatrick, I just subconsciously add the phrase journeyman quarterback in my head.
Oh, he's a journeyman, all right. There's no doubt about
and
that. I mean,
it's just, why can't they have a franchise quarterback? Well, I don't understand. How did we get here?
I guess you can't force it. You know, if they just didn't think any of those, they had the number one pick. If you don't think, you know, if you're not a huge believer in any of those guys that were there this year, like Bortles and stuff like that, you know, you pass up on Clowney for something like that. You know, it's the first year of Bill O'Brien as the head coach.
He's got time.
Yeah. And they gave Kubiak time. He had a number of non-playoff years before he got to the playoffs eventually. So I think you could have some. It's not going to be some Cleveland Browns situation where they're going to pull the plug after 1 year. I don't believe that. I think Bob McNair will give it time. And if they're as bad as John thinks they might be sitting on a nice quarterback prospect to build around next year.
Yeah.
In the meantime, to offer what perspective I can on Fitz, you know, he is good at kind of running an offense in terms of, you know, getting the communication down. Obviously, he is a very cerebral player and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, he's got that part of it down. But physically, you know, he's not the most gifted quarterback. And so I think the biggest problem is, like, he's such a try-hard player. It's a weird thing to say, but it's like he looks like he's trying harder than other people.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's putting all of his body into every throw to get any kind of velocity into it.
But there, you know, there is
like, because he just doesn't have a great arm naturally. But I think the problem is because he isn't like a really conservative quarterback. He's not a captain check down type of guy. You know, sometimes he is going to try and fit it somewhere that really his physical ability does not allow.
One perk though he has now though is he's not playing in Buffalo and he's not dealing with that weather.
No, that's true. I mean, I think he was relative, considering he played all those games in Buffalo, and then, of course, you get the trip to the Meadowlands, you get the trip to Foxborough.
Right.
You know, so you get, it's not even just the
I think
Buffalo
I think
game.
You need to look at his games in, like, Miami to understand what to expect from
no,
him.
No, and I mean, he had huge games with the Bills, playing, you know, with really, you know, not a lot at receivers, Stevie Johnson and not a lot else, you know, and when the Bills finally beat the Patriots, you know, he lit them up. Admittedly, a lot of people lit up the Patriots that year, but you know, I mean, he can have big games. He wasn't that bad with Tennessee last year, but it's, you know, he's not particularly what you'd want, you know, for a team that I think is going to rely on their defense. I think what you'd prefer is somebody with a big arm that could stretch the field and hopefully would just like do a lot of sort of handing off and just somebody that the other team would have to respect as a threat.
Right.
Rather than, you know, think about Fitz, he's kind of pretty good for a guy who has to throw it all over the place, considering he's not that gifted. But ultimately, you know, he isn't that gifted, so there's very much a ceiling on it, you know, and he's not above making mistakes.
He's Captain Make-Do, I think, is the way.
Yeah, exactly. The way he always looks so determined, he tries so hard, and he's got that sort of big beard on him. I always think of him as being rather like Arthur from Ghouls and Ghosts, and, you know, because he's got the helmet on and all that. And of course, there was that one time for the Bills where he got sacked and all his pads just fell off and he was running around his boxes. We all laughed at that one. But yeah, I mean, I think the Texans, yeah, they're going to be better than 2-14, but I still feel like the offense, receiving-wise and stuff, there isn't enough there to make
there's something
missing. They'll win some close games, no doubt. Like, that defense will keep them in and they will win some close games and squeak some out, but maybe they'll be a bit better than the Jaguars, but I just don't see them being
better. I wouldn't bet on that for sure, because I think the Jags have got a good defense too. Probably not as good, though. Yeah. I still feel like it could be something special.
I think we talked about in the AFC North, teams that have room to fall. The AFC South has so many teams with room to go up.
Yeah, because it was a terrible division.
The Titans are 7-9, but keep in mind, a bunch of their wins were against Houston and Jacksonville.
No, exactly. That's the point. I mean, they supplied wins themselves. You know, most other teams, you know, they played the NFC West, and the NFC, you know, some of the reason why the NFC West had three teams with 10 wins in it is because that entire division
was
ruined
terrible.
This division. You know, it just killed the AFC South collectively. So, I mean, I think to go to Tennessee before we kind of wrap this division up a bit. Obviously, it's all changed with Ken Whisenhunt coming in. I think he's bringing Ray Horton with him as defensive coordinator, who I spoke about last year. I'm a big fan of as a coordinator.
I like all of those hires. I like everything they're doing in Tennessee.
Yeah,
Whisenhunt's
good. I like that guy a lot.
I think Whisenhunt's interesting because, of course, what was his downfall in Arizona was the line play in the end. It just got so bad,
right?
You know, that it completely killed it. And you've got to say something was not going right there because Arians was able to work around it. You know, so he raises some questions about what he and his staff were doing relative to what Arians did with not much better looking personnel.
Well, and I think you can also look at Whisenhunt and go, there's a reason the Steelers let him leave, knowing that it was coming close to time to make a new head coach.
Yeah, of course, because there was the issue of Cowher moving on, and they went for an outside candidate like Tomlin instead of Whisenhunt. But one thing I will say, though, is that, first of all, should not be a problem with the offensive line in Tennessee. They have invested hugely
in
the offensive line, in the draft and free agency. You know, Taylor Lewan coming in this year, a high draft pick. So they've got the horses there to get a decent offensive line. And, you know, he's shown in the past that, you know, that they can get a good offense going with as long as the offensive line is not even necessarily particularly good. I mean, what good when Kurt Warner was throwing it all over the place in Arizona?
Yeah. Sure.
It was good enough. You know, it just wasn't terrible.
I
think the problem is Locker, isn't
it?
Idea how good he is because he's always getting injured, and Tennessee have had personnel issues, and we don't know.
I mean, I watched Locker in college and never felt good about him.
Yeah. Like, He was always overrated.
Bortles, like, oh, he looks like an NFL quarterback. He has the body of an NFL quarterback. But the difference was Bortles actually played like one out there. When I looked at Locker, he was on those Washington teams that just weren't very good.
Yeah.
And you're like, at some point, he has to carry some of the load for those teams being not very good. He left, and that Washington, granted, they hired Steve Sarkisian, who's really good as a coach. Those teams got immensely better without him. Mm-hmm. At some point, you have to say, okay, maybe Jake Locker just looks the part.
Yeah.
Maybe he is, you know, the pantomime quarterback. At some point, he's got to do something. I mean, granted.
No, I mean, it's kind of weird because he's actually, you know, it's been quite a few years now. And yeah, I think a lot of it is the injury issue is kind of, weirdly, might have actually kept him around because, you know, had he been on the field and they'd seen him for a longer period of time, they might have decided by now, okay, we can move on.
So when I say Ryan Fitzpatrick, I subconsciously hear journeyman quarterback. I hear Jake Locker and I go, wait, what? He's still playing?
Yeah,
he seems like a bust.
You know?
The other thing is, though, is that, you know, and for whatever reason, the people who get injured keep getting injured, you know, and it's, sometimes it's different injuries and it's freak things or whatever, but there is an issue with people staying on the field at a certain point, and you've got to say, if he can't do it this year, and if, you know, I think he's coming to the point of being out of contract, so they'll just, even, you know, he doesn't have to stink it up this year or anything for them to move on from him.
Yeah.
You know, it's more on the positive side now. He's like, he has actually got to stay on the field and play well to give them a reason to re-sign him. That's the point
right,
that we're
because at some point they need to start deciding, okay, are we just going to cut bait and draft somebody new?
Yeah.
But, you know, Wizenhunt has done some things. You know, I mean, people might forget. You know, people thought Warner was done.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he looked done.
I mean, because he'd been on the Giants team with before Eli took over, and he was getting sacked left, right, and center, and towards the back end of the Mike Martz at the Rams, he was getting sacked all the time. And, you know, he's kind of like, okay, you know, he had his run and it's over. And yet, you know, they ended up going to a Super Bowl with Warner. And of course, last year, Wizenhunt was the coordinator in San Diego for Mike McCoy. And yeah, Philip Rivers had a bit of a renaissance, didn't he? You know, he had his best year for a number of years. So this is somebody who can seem to raise the level of play of an offense, and a quarterback in particular. So it would surprise me if we saw more from Locker than we've seen before at all. But I think it'd still be a question of whether Wizenhunt does, you know, goes through that process and thinks, yeah, this is the guy I want to bet my future.
And I think Warner's interesting because if you go back, Warner has this history of us going, well, you know, whatever, Warner. But I think I think Warner had it mentally more than a lot of quarterbacks. Maybe not physically. I think Jake Locker's kind of the opposite. I mean, he's very much physically talented. I just have never looked at his game and gone, ah, that's a guy who gets the game. And I think that makes it a much more difficult coaching opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I've never really seen him as somebody who just takes over games, you know? You never really see really that big highlight reel sort of thing from him.
He's like a less idiot Rex Grossman to me.
Oh, God, yeah. Rex.
Like, he's got these physical traits, and you're like...
Right, by the way, Rex Grossman also is a similar situation. So he got injured quite a lot his first couple of years. And, like, you know, the Bears might have moved on from him before they had the Super Bowl team, if they kind of knew what they had. And then, of course, he ends up being on that Super Bowl team. And, yeah, they probably would be better off if it was someone else, because if they got there with him, they might well have won it with someone else.
I mean, you're
that's what's really annoying about... You know, it was annoying with EJ getting hurt a lot last year. You know, you just want to find out about these people.
You'll see a locker pass and go, damn, really? But those are almost fool's gold. Like, they...
Yeah, and I think another thing that's underestimated in terms of as a talent unto itself is just accuracy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, in terms of, like, we talk about velocity, you talk about reading the game, the mental part, and then, you know, whether you've got the physical part, like a cannon arm and all that, but just getting the ball where you want it to go is a gift all unto itself. You know, you could be the smartest guy in the room and still not be an accurate thrower. You can have the biggest arm in the world and not be an accurate thrower. And people like Drew Brees, I mean, that's what he's got.
He's never been
big. He's never had a big arm. He's just really damn accurate.
Same thing as Matt Ryan.
I mean, that's what Brady's game is now. He's just very accurate.
Yep.
And that, because like I said, I mean, the problem is you can make all the right decisions, but if the ball doesn't go where you want it to, it looks like you made the wrong one.
Right.
You know, so I think that's what's difficult to disentangle as fans on the outside, unless you really drill down into, like, what's in the All 22 film and really getting into it, is, you know, what is a bad decision and what is just a bad throw, you know, and I feel like the simple accuracy part of it is something that's just almost a little bit underappreciated. Of just like, that is a talent, you know, that is something that people kind of have or they don't. And yeah, you can work on mechanics to be more consistent and get better in that department, but some people are never going to be that great in accuracy. Well, it's a concern with EJ, and because Locker hasn't played that much, you haven't really got that big sample size.
Yeah, I mean,
say, you know, is this guy an NFL accurate quarterback?
The fact that stuff to go back in my head to what he was at Washington, that's a generation ago.
Yeah. It's a long time ago, and again, you know, it's college football. Yeah, everybody talks about the windows being bigger, you know, so it's not the same.
Right.
It's not the same. That's why you do get so many quarterbacks that can look good in college that don't work out. And then conversely, you know, quarterbacks, you know, obviously Tom Brady's the ultimate example that, you know, his skill set ended up being a lot more kind of appreciated in the pros once he got pro coaching, especially.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at these guys talking about completion percentages, just looking up their stats. Brady's completion percentage career, 63.4.
That's just dumb. I mean, that's a dumb number.
Matt Ryan, similar. He's 63 point something. Locker is 57%.
Yeah, and I mean, Tennessee have had issues in that regard. You know, they've not had. Yeah, it's not a big sample, so that's the problem.
Yeah, well, but the thing is, though, Brady. Yeah, I mean, he's 63% career, so he's been higher than that, right?
So, I mean, think about
no,
it.
He's been way higher.
That doesn't sound like a lot.
No, the thing is, Brady's old enough to have played like before they totally kind of emphasized the rules in such a way that it was way in favor.
But you say that's like 6%. Yeah. But how many passes did Brady throw last year? 100, right?
Last year Brady's percentage was down considerably, mainly because the receivers
right.
balls.
Yeah, but, Brady has thrown 6,586 passes for his career, and
so 6% passes completed.
Yeah, like that's the thing. That's exactly it. 6% is massive over 6,500 passes.
And
that's
and
huge.
Like I want to say the average NFL passing attempt nets about 5.5 yards. I mean that's thousands of yards of missed opportunity in that 6%.
Yep.
No, it's especially now, and I mean, this is something that comes into play, Jared. You know, we've seen it in preseason, this emphasis on the way they're calling now, the more, you know, so happened 10 years ago, didn't it? The Patriots, you know, shut down the Colts in the championship game, the Panthers shut down the Eagles in the championship game, and everyone's, oh, you know, they were mugging the receivers at the line, so the competition committee had to say, we're going to have to make those calls more often. And guess what? The next year, Peyton Manning broke the touchdown record, and the numbers started getting crazy. And then a couple of years later, Brady broke that record, and you know it just started.
I mean, the numbers don't make sense anymore.
This year, in the wake of what the Seahawks did to Denver in the Super Bowl, we've got another emphasis on it again, and goodness knows what the really good quarterbacks are going to do.
24,000 yards passing
with the way it's called that, and so maybe it'll only show up. Teams that don't have the, you know, the rich get richer. That's generally what I'm saying. You know, that's what seemed to happen 10 years ago. It may well be what happens now, and that's why it's difficult with a team like Tennessee with a totally unproven quarterback to give them the edge in a division that's got Andrew Luck playing for the Colts, where you know his completion percentage has not actually been that stellar yet.
No.
But I do think that's got a lot to do with the fact that the offensive line isn't that great. The running game is pitiful. Or has been
even with
pitiful
with what's his face Trent
yeah well they
Richardson.
Traded a first round pick for Trent Richardson and basically that didn't make the run blocking any better.
Yeah, good figure.
I mean, I'm not trying to absolve Richardson here. I mean, I think you know, all accounts he did not run well, and I'm not sure that was a wise trade to make. However, they have not got a good run blocking line. You know, you could put a lot of people. All right, maybe like Barry Sanders could make, you know, anything out of any line because he was ridiculous. But you know, in terms of more conventional running backs, you depend on your blocking, and they have not had it yet. But so I mean, let's close out because I think we'll probably talk about the Colts a little bit when we talk about the playoffs in the AFC. But are we content to say after all that the Colts are going to win the division?
I'm not content with them. I mean,
yeah,
I think,
say it through my teeth.
Yeah, I mean, I think I feel like the Titans could surprise us, but it'll probably be the Colts. I mean, the Colts, it's like
they're not that great, are they?
No, they're not that great.
The problem is that, you know, they've been to the playoffs twice with Andrew Luck, and you think, well, he's only going to get better, and the team is getting better around him, so it's hard for me to say they're going to go backwards.
I think the beauty of this division is they're playing the AFC North and the NFC East. We talked about the AFC North, but the NFC East as well. They're basically playing they're a mystery division playing two mystery divisions.
Yeah, that's true. It's very up in the air. There's not many games where it's like, well, that's definitely a win, or that's definitely a loss.
I don't know that any division has had a schedule that is every single game question mark. But congratulations to this team.
No, it's true. It's like, because last year, you know, they did play the NFC West, and you know, this division.
Excuse me, they're playing the NFC
said,
South. And, excuse me, that's another mystery division. Yes.
So that was a lot. But yeah, I think. You know, I have to give it to them ultimately, but I don't feel like they're a bar that's so high to reach that one of the other teams couldn't get there. You know,
right?
But because they still, I'm not convinced by the run blocking. You've still got the issue of Reggie Wayne is getting on in years and now coming back from a very serious injury that he sustained in the middle of last year. When you look at them in the playoffs, they looked a long way away from being, even though they won a game against the Chiefs, that crazy high scoring game.
That game made no sense in the context of the season either.
It was an incredibly bizarre game, but it had a lot to do with key Chiefs players getting injured in the game.
Oh, absolutely. That game...
To be fair to the Chiefs, they got a real unfortunate...
I look at this division and say the only team that can't significantly surprise me is Houston. They could tack on some wins, but...
They're still going to be what you think, a team with a good defense that still ends up losing most of its games.
Right. The Jags, I don't... Jags could pull an 8-8, and 8-8 may win this division for all we know, depending on how that 8-8 falls.
I think the divisions they're playing this year probably won't be good enough to take enough games off them to make it an 8-8 situation that wins the division. But definitely 9 or 10. The only thing I say is just in the way the league is now, the way it's going to be officiated, it could be even more crazy than ever. They might not have a great team around Andrew Luck, but it might well be all they need to win the division comfortably.
Yeah.
It's just you don't know how crazy it's going to be.
I can see 10 games winning this.
I can see 9 games winning this division. Some of the preseason games have been insufferable with...
No, it flags every play. And I get they're probably trying to make more of a statement in the preseason as sort of preface to the regular season. And I don't know whether they got the balls to call that many penalties in the real games, because people will just be up in arms. But one way or another, it's going to filter down onto the field. It will affect however many flags get called. People are teaching it different in camp. Mike Pettine at the Browns, our old defensive coordinator, who's now their head coach, was having them the defensive backs practice with boxing gloves on, so they physically couldn't hold anybody.
That's really fun. I want to see that.
They're teaching them different. It is going to affect the game, however many flags are called, and it is going to favour the offense. So I can't pick against Andrew Luck in that scenario. I just can't do it. But anyway, we'll move on to the final division of the AFC now, the AFC West, which of course has the AFC champion Denver Broncos in it. Is anybody going to pick against Denver?
Nah.
I mean, which we just talked about, with the passing rules, Manning could score 11,000 touchdowns.
Yeah. 57 touchdowns last year, I believe it was, smashing the previous record of 50.
And 57, and it felt like he should have had more.
No, I mean, it was enormous, and I imagine it'll be a big number again, perhaps only made bigger by this whole situation with the rules. But we can't pick against Denver.
But at the same time, the Chiefs were good last year.
They were, I think. Well, basically, let's leave Denver. I think we agree are contenders.
Yeah,
so I think Denver
is definitely a playoff team, so we can set.
They're in the playoffs, so let's put them in the playoff section that we're going to get to just after this one wraps up. Let's talk about the other teams in division. Firstly, Oakland.
Matt Schaub is the quarterback. What more do you
Matt
need Schaub's to say?
Matt Schaub's the quarterback. Matt Schaub, as we've obviously already covered a little bit talking about the Texans, one of the most memorable meltdowns I think a player has had.
How many games were Derek Carr's playing?
I don't know. I mean,
Derek Carr's
got the
big arm. I mean, I'm thinking.
I'm trying to disentangle kind of what happened to him at Houston, because obviously he had some incredibly good years with Houston.
He did. Very good.
Kubiak runs a good offense. They had Foster running the ball really well. But I think the main engine of that was an excellent offensive line. And then you had, Andre Johnson as well to throw to. They had pieces. But Schaub still, he did the job. He was the leader of that offense that was so productive. And then you get to last year, and I just feel like it was the accumulation of all these. The offensive line wasn't as good anymore. Arian Foster's experienced so many carries. He's probably not as vigorous as he used to be.
I think there was a coaching drop off as well.
I think the biggest thing is just that Schaub lost his confidence, and then it really fell apart. They weren't going to be as good as they've been in years past because the players weren't as good.
Right.
But then once he's threw one pick six, it was another the next week and another the next week, and you just felt like, if you'd left him in there, he just would have kept doing it over and over again.
Yeah, his confidence was absolutely shot, and it just it just, you know, it snowballed to the point where the fans turned on him. He had people showing up at his house, cursing him out. It was just bad. It was a nightmare scenario.
It just fell apart in the most spectacular way. And I guess the thing is, do you say when he goes somewhere like Oakland? And obviously Oakland have been dealing with the fallout from the end of Al Davis.
From Al Davis' second death.
Yeah, I mean, no one really expects Oakland to do anything. And I think that was part of the problem.
But the problem with Oakland is
that everybody expected them. There was a lot of pressure on them.
I think that's exactly right.
But do you look at Dennis Allen and say, this is a man who's going to assemble a staff to pull a player out of a funk? No, I would say this is a man who's going to assemble a staff that's going to make me laugh, you know, every third Sunday when they're on TV.
Yeah, but the history of Oakland quarterbacks is well documented.
I mean, didn't they draft Terrell Pryor a couple years ago?
I'm pretty sure he has played for. But the fact of the matter for me is that the pressure's off now. You know, there isn't any of that. So the question is, how much does that raise his game back again? You know, but what we do know is that the personnel ain't going to be like that. Texans' personnel is
miles better than that Oakland.
He had a Rolls Royce at one point. I don't know what make of car this is, but
what was the quarterback they draft? I mean, the receiver they drafted. Just because he ran really fast.
They drafted Haywood Bay.
That's it. Haywood Bay.
That guy was ridiculous. He was on no one's draft board, but they're just like, how fast does he run? He runs a 4.34. He's drafted.
I'm actually surprised he's stuck around in the league for a while. I think he's at Pittsburgh now. He's kind of just better than some of Al Davis's choice.
Well, they still picks. Have Darren McFadden, right?
I think that we did re-sign McFadden, so he's still there. But I mean, the biggest thing about Oakland is they're only really now getting what should be year one for them, because after you had the whole Al Davis thing, the Hugh Jackson stuff at the end, giving away a first round pick for Carson Palmer, signing people at big contracts they had no business to. They have had huge amounts of the cap dedicated to players that aren't playing for them anymore because of the dead money, the accelerated bonus hits that rack up, and then they didn't have the high draft picks they should have had and stuff like that. So now, finally, this is kind of like year one. You know, they had draft picks.
They're basically an expansion team right now.
They went out and signed, you know, some actual veteran players, but they kind of swung and missed on a number of them that they wanted to get, but they still got people, I think, like Justin Tuck, who used to play for the Giants, things like that. So, I mean, this really does feel like it should be year one for Dennis Allen, and yet it's year three.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, how much latitude is this guy going to get? Because he should get a lot in a lot of ways, but on the other hand, who survives 3 years where they they might not win more than six games in any of them?
I mean,
you know, that is tough to survive under any circumstance.
To a certain extent, it's like a super fun reclamation site. Yeah, it's not as radioactive as it used to be, but the kids still have three eyes. So at some point, something needs to happen.
I don't envy, you know, the position that he's in, especially as the rest of the division has kind of improved, was better last year than I thought it was going to be in some way, particularly the Chargers. I did pick the Chiefs to go to the playoffs, but yeah, the Chargers, I think
even Denver,
well.
I don't think any of us expect them to go 13-3.
I thought they could because of the softness they beat up on everybody else and they've got really good home field advantage, but you know, just the ludicrous heights that the offense got to, it's hard to imagine that they would smash the touchdown record.
And I look at those teams, Peyton Manning's, you know, 300 years old, but at some point I just don't see where the Oakland has anywhere to go. They're playing the AFC East, which we've agreed should be a better division than it was last year. And the NFC,
good defenses,
and the NFC
well.
West, which is just Christ.
That's terrible. That's a nightmare.
They'll lose every game against the NFC West. I mean, period.
No, that is an absolute nightmare. So I think Oakland, you know, realistically, they should just be looking for signs of progress. And then if they see those, maybe you bring Allen back and see what maybe, you know, Derek Carr gets in at some point, and you know, hopefully he looks good. And then you think next year we can really get going. But
I mean, what's progress though? 4-12 again. If they got 4-12 again, that's progress because that's a harder schedule this year.
Yeah, I think that's true. But question. Really, it's like, will ownership see it?
That's
that
a hard
way?
Sell.
It's hard
like,
to imagine.
Like, I know we got the same record, but seriously.
Yeah,
that's a big deal.
They should bomb out and draft a quarterback. Really?
Oh, yeah, because that's worked out great for them in the past.
Well, it's who's there, isn't it?
You just got to keep trying, I guess.
Is Al Davis really gone? I mean, who knows?
Well, it will be interesting, especially with all the talk about relocation.
Yeah. They're drafting.
Well, he's probably like Tupac, right? You know how Tupac kept releasing albums like years after his death? Al Davis?
No.
He probably has his draft card filled out already for like the next 10 years.
The relocation conversation is interesting because it's them in Jacksonville who are the most common topics.
Yeah. Well, also, yeah, the Chargers, who were in this division, of course, as well, they don't have a long-term lease commitment with their stadium. St. Louis, as well, in the NFC. So you've got three teams with ties to LA and Southern California, you know, that are available. At a time where, you know, it's been 20 years since the NFL had the teams there.
Yeah.
It will be interesting.
Well, and
to see
and
what
there's this constant drumbeat of building a stadium on top of the site of E3 to bring it back to bring it back to the primary focus of this podcast usually.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so I mean I think we could finally be getting close to that, but who knows who, and it may be just the fact that there's a bunch of teams right now, like it might force their hand to try and get in first, you know, like rather than get beaten to the punch.
And I mean I've heard some talk that it could be that they're not going to build a stadium unless they get two teams. Which is insane to think about.
Because that went so well before.
Yeah, that's true. But the idea is that there'd be a game there every week.
Yeah, no, and I mean, you assume it'd be a big money spinner. And the NFL is bigger than it was 20 years ago.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
it's a lot bigger. Night and day.
That's a long time. But, well, we'll move on to the Chargers then, who did get a bit of a surprise playoff appearance last year by winning their final four games.
Welcome back.
Even though that last one against the Chiefs backups was kind of fuddy-duddy, as we mentioned. But, yeah, the interesting part for in terms of them progressing for me is how much of a role do we give Ken Whisenhunt in what they did last year? Because, you know, I mean, Mike McCoy, who's the head coach, is an offensive coach, granted, you know, but he's also a very young offensive coach that's basically there because he stood next to Peyton Manning for a while. You know, so I'm not convinced that, you know, by himself or with his new offensive coordinator who used to be the Bills' backup quarterback, Frank Reich, you might remember him from a little thing we like to call the greatest comeback in history. He's the offensive coordinator now, but has no play calling experience.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Whisenhunt was there for just 1 year, right? Or was it two?
Yeah, Whisenhunt came in with McCoy last year, one year. And got the offense going again very nicely after it was really starting to sputter
the wheels
a lot
come off that offense
at the end of the Norv period.
Are you implying Norv Turner might ruin teams after a few years?
I think I was more about personnel, to be honest. I think the dying days of the AJ Smith general manager era, they weren't restocking the talent level as much, and Norv wasn't a good enough coach to compensate. I think that's probably fair enough to say. Whisenhunt, I think, you know, was a significant part of what they did last year. I don't think you could just take it for granted the offense will be as good without it.
Right. I mean, friend of the show, Norv Turner. Let's go ahead and clarify that. I think it's hard to say what this team's going to look like because you have to say that the coaching change made a difference because Philip Rivers looked like a different person.
I think the combination of the new scheme and better line play, he looked a lot better. And you know, they for most of the year, the defense was really damn bad. Right.
Yeah.
So they won 9 games by virtue of how productive the offense was, because the fact is, yeah, they played a little better towards the end, and certainly that had something to do with the fact that they beat the Bengals in the playoffs, which was, you know, a pretty big scalp for them to go on the road, you know, away from sunny California to somewhere like Cincinnati and win. The defense had to play better, and it did, but broadly speaking, it was all about the offense, and you know, I'm not sure how much the defense is going to improve this year either.
I'm not sure how much you want to put stock in a preseason game, but they did play Seattle, well, it was Friday, I think, and gave up 41 points. So,
yeah, again, I mean
the starters gave up, I want to say they gave up 17 by the end, by the second.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty dominant performance, I think, by Seattle. But Seattle are very good. I just feel like, yeah, they're another one of these teams we've talked about that, yeah, because of the sort of mediocrity that we think will reign again in the AFC, are very much in the mix. But in terms of becoming a bona fide contender or being somebody you expect to get a wild card, I'm not willing to go there. I feel like they will be pretty similar to last year, but if they're even a bit less proficient on offense, it could be a problem.
They're maybe a one and done playoff team to me.
And the other part of it is that more difficult schedule. The fact of the matter is, I think a lot of the reason why you had three teams go to the playoffs from the AFC West last year is because they played the NFC East. You know, and the fact is, I mean, when we look at what happened with Denver in the Super Bowl, you know, how could this offense that was so damn productive in all the games leading up to it be so bad in the Super Bowl? It's one game, you know, and everything that could go wrong did go wrong and all that. But the fact of the matter is, they went an entire season without playing anybody who could play defense.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody sucked on the...
Here's a good example. They went 3-1 against the NFC East, and you probably won't guess the one loss. It was Washington. So
they
beat Philadelphia in week 2 when they were still putting it together.
Yeah, and also Philly's defense was never particularly good. Rivers
put up 419 yards against that Philly defense, and that was that Philly team that had to play like three games in 10 days. That was game 2 of their 10-day stretch. I mean, yeah, they were gonna.
No, I just think that the fact is Philly had a bad pass defense. The Cowboys had one of the worst defenses I've ever seen. James is very familiar with how bad the Redskins defense was. The Giants were the only team that could play defense in the division last year, but they were so bad at turning the ball over in the first half of the season. It was kind of a moot point. So no, I mean, I think that's the fact of the matter, is that the Chiefs, the Chargers, and Denver, they all profited from this. They went a lot of the season playing, you know, themselves within the division, and the teams outside that they got not a lot of very good defense.
And they played AFC East too, didn't they?
No, they played in the AFC East this year, and that's the thing. I mean, I'm pretty sure last year they played the South.
Oh, that's right, because they had Jacksonville, and they had
they had Jacksonville. They had
Tennessee,
Baltimore. Yep, they played the AFC. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so
the AFC South.
I mean, and Houston. Actually, they lost half their games to the AFC South.
No, which isn't even, you know, a strong division, or wasn't last year. So that's the point I'm making, is that, you know, really the only sort of, I mean, they played the Texans in week 1, who had a decent defense, and they lost to them. You know, like they did not play a lot of good defense. This year, you play the NFC West. We know about the defense of that division. Play the AFC East. What we say, that's what it's got right now. Maybe the Patriots' defense isn't that great, but that's a moot point because they're the Patriots, so you're still going to struggle to beat them. I think it's going to be very different this year for them in terms of the opponents. So the team might not be that different, but the record may end up being different.
And you look at these games that they played last year, and you can see it. I mean, you can see that Rivers is still the Philip Rivers we know and love. He had 184 yards against Tennessee. The week before, he had thrown for 419. Surprising. The week after, he threw for 401. I mean, this is our good friend Philip Rivers over here, that he has these games in him where he'll throw for 166 yards and 2 interceptions and somehow still win, because it was that Denver team that was like, all right, we've already locked up everything. Screw it. We don't care.
Yeah, I think this also applies to the Chiefs too. I mean, I like the Chiefs to make the playoffs last year, in part because I thought it would be a soft slate for them. You know, and that proved to be the case.
Absolutely.
But again, similar to what we said about the Jags, it's important to break down what actually, you know, you look at it, you say 11-5. You know, that's a damn good record for a team that had the first overall pick the year before. But yeah, they were 9-0, and yep, they did that in large part, you know, well, maybe not large, but significant, a major part.
Noteworthy.
Was that they played a whole string of backup quarterbacks. It was just crazy. Like, every week that they played somebody, It was not their regular quarterback. I remember they played the Bills in that streak, where we essentially had a fourth string quarterback.
Right, that was
Jeff
the quarterback
Tool.
They'd yep. pulled off like the
Jeff Tool.
Squad.
Jeff Tool was playing because EJ was injured, Kevin Cobb was on injured reserve, and Thad Lewis, who had been playing from Duke, was also injured. So you're fourth
string.
We damn we nearly won that game.
I mean, if you look at the Chiefs' schedule, they had almost all of their out-of-conference games at the start, or out-of-division games. So they had Jacksonville, Dallas, Philly, New York, Tennessee. Then they had Oakland, whatever. Houston, Cleveland, Buffalo. I mean, they basically covered them all at the very beginning of the season. And then they had lost Denver, lost San Diego, lost Denver. And then they had their Washington game, which I don't want to talk about that game. And then, then it was Oakland, Indy, San Diego. And they only won one of those games.
Yeah. No, so I mean, some of it obviously right at the end, like you said, they played their backups against the Chargers and nearly won. But I mean, the fact is, they did have that sort of. Was it a swoon, or did they just play harder teams, or teams that at least had their first string quarterback?
At least it looks like definitively they played harder teams. Except
They did.
So
I think they played teams with better quarterbacks. Yeah. I mean, look at the quarterbacks.
Once you go to Peyton Manning, Philip Rivers, it's a pretty huge step up on Jeff Tool.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about that.
I mean, basically they played Manning, Andrew Luck, and Rivers. So, and that was it. And they did absolutely terrible against all of them.
And of course they lost in the playoffs to Luck. A huge collapse. Like I said, I think the injuries had a lot to do with that. But I think it also just says something about commendable job that Andy Reid did going in there. Commendable job by Alex Smith coming in and playing pretty well. Especially, actually, the offense was getting better towards the end of the season.
Oh yeah,
but the defense was getting exposed
against the better blew the doors off on offense. I mean, it was very consistent mid 200s pretty much every week passing.
But again, because in those earlier games when you're playing these weaker teams, they didn't need to open it up.
Right.
So they didn't, and then they did actually. I mean, I said that playoff game against the Colts, that was crazy. I mean, that was open as you like. So I mean, they can open it up a bit, but I think they'll have to this year because they are playing tougher teams. But ultimately, they might be better than they were last year, but I don't see 11 wins being in the cards at all.
Yeah, I mean,
for the
Chiefs. Maybe 9-7,
to John's point,
like that.
They went 0-6 against Philip Rivers, Andrew Luck, and Peyton Manning. They had two chances at all of them and lost all of those games.
Yep. So, I think it says something about a bit of a ceiling on them. And, they have lost certain players from last year, like Brandon Albert. We talked about him going to Miami, Dexter McCluster. So, I'm not seeing a particular reason why they would be that much better, apart from, is the defense going to get quite a lot better perhaps with another year in this scheme that they're running, because it looked good to start with last year, but I think that was mostly because of who they were playing. So this year maybe it could actually be legitimately good, but I don't know. I'm not convinced, so I'm not giving them a chance to win the division over Denver. And so we have now run through the divisions and we could talk about what we expect to happen in the playoffs. So to recap, we have New England, all of us, I believe, winning the East.
Yep.
We each picked a different team to win the North. So I had Baltimore, James had Pittsburgh, and John had Cincinnati.
Correct.
Then we had all had Indy in the South, and we all had Denver in the West. So what we need to do to complete our AFC playoff field is pick the wild cards.
Oh, God.
So... This is difficult
is
because last year, as I said, I mean, the Chiefs had that one spot wrapped up with the 9-0 start, essentially. But the other spot could have been almost anyone. It could be Miami, it could be the Chargers, it could be Pittsburgh, it could be Baltimore. I mean, it was just...
It was a fucking mess.
It was totally up in the air. And so picking, I think this is very difficult, but we do have to do it.
And the tricky part is those divisions where we all just went, I don't know, anybody could win this division.
Exactly.
Those are the ones that aren't going to have it because ultimately they're going to beat each other up.
Mm-hmm. It's coin flip type of stuff, but and I think it's going to be, probably could end up drilling way down into the tiebreakers, you know, common opponents, net points, God knows, you know, where how deep we're going to get, all that kind of stuff before we know who's actually going to be in the playoffs. But we've got to pick two.
All right.
So James, you kick off.
I'm going to say, I don't know why. I have no reason to believe this. I have no faith in them. But I'm going to say I think the Ravens end up in the second NFC North in just a complete clusterfuck of a division.
Right, Steelers and Ravens.
And I think maybe they eke it out at some point. I think they might – but I would see them almost as the second wild card slot.
Right, so who would be the first?
It's got to be somebody out of the AFC West, I feel like. Because that's the division that's got the most, the lowest.
One of the two that made it last year will get back as one of the two wild cards.
You have to feel like it's that way, and I guess I have more faith that Andy Reid can put together improvement than I do that San Diego can improve, especially given what's going on in San Diego with the stadium and the possibility of moving a team and. I'll tell you what,
Kansas City has a way better home field advantage.
And they do, and I still don't trust Phil Rivers. I just can't.
Yeah, this was this
John.
Was, yeah,
well, well, this so, was so, a... so we say in, we say Kansas City and Pittsburgh. Sorry, Baltimore for the
yes.
Yeah. For your
see, the thing is, John. Originally, I would have. I originally thought Kansas City and Tennessee, but I don't believe in Jake Locker. And I don't really believe the thing is. I think you're gonna see a considerable drop off. Like I could see them going like 9-7, maybe 8-8, just because they're actually gonna be playing real
absolutely.
Teams.
Absolutely,
absolutely. Yeah. But then they could still get in with that kind of record.
I think Baltimore, that's just because I think they're still solidly built, solidly coached team. They're the kind of team where you know, put them in a playoff game regardless of record, and I feel like they're a tough team that got
and
shot.
There's always that post Super Bowl swoon that hits a lot of teams.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Maybe they'll bounce back. I mean, the fact is, you know, this is a team that with John Harbaugh and Joe Flacco at the helm went to the playoffs every single year, you know, to start with until they won the Super Bowl, won at least one playoff game every single year. Yeah. And last year, yeah, you know, it looked like it was going to be an awkward year for them with all the players that had to change. It was. They were still 8-8. They were still a game out of the playoffs.
How do you get players to listen to you when you just won Super Bowl? Like,
it's you know, I think they. Yeah, that's why I picked them to win the division. But certainly, you know, you could make it the same sort of argument that they could be a wild card.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll be in the mix. So, Baltimore,
so what are you going with?
Baltimore, and the other one is just—it's tough.
We're going to be wrong. So just say Jacksonville
really
and just own it. Just be like, all right,
I'll go out on a little bit of a limb, and I'll say Tennessee. I'll say Tennessee.
Okay, I like that. This, you know, that it's something different. That's why. My picks are a little odd because they're both from the same division, so you might not think that, you know, a division is going to send three teams, but they did, you know, the AFC West did it
last year.
So it can happen. I am picking the Steelers and the Bengals to be wild cards from the Ravens division.
Yeah. What?
So I'm sorry, Browns fans.
I mean, what a fucking shit show that division would be for the Browns.
The Browns are my favorite team in that division. But
I mean, you're basically.
I'm really sorry to pick everyone.
I mean,
else
you're basically
the
saying
player.
The Browns are going to have to go 0-6 in that division. I mean, effectively.
No, I don't know about that, but yeah, I mean, I'm assuming the other teams are going to, you know, take games off them for sure. And like I said, I mean. It is up for grabs. If the Browns had Gordon for 16 games, you could make an argument that they could win it. You know, I really feel like it's just they don't have a lot else at receiver. They didn't take, you know, Sammy Watkins like they could have done. All that, you know, I think because the Bills will probably finish with a, you know, 7-win type of season or something. You know, they're going to get a top 15 pick out of it. So it'll probably be a good deal for them ultimately. But this year, with the Gordon suspension and all that, I just, you know, I think it's going to be a year too soon for the Browns. But hopefully they'll just have the wisdom this time to not sack the coaching staff.
I just didn't like anything I saw last night watching them.
Yeah, I know. I've seen some of it. It wasn't pretty, that second preseason game against Washington. But
because the second one's the one you actually try it, right? I mean, that's the one where...
No, it's the third one. I think you'll find Denny Green was very clear on this topic. No one treats the third game of the preseason like it's bullshit. All right.
I mean, it just seemed disorganized is ultimately what it came down to.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a work in progress at offense in particular, but the defense could be really good because I saw firsthand Pettine coming out of that Rex Ryan brand of defense, very creative, but they've also just got really good players there. And the fact is, they've got the corners to really run that kind of defense. Yeah. Probably got better corners in Cleveland now, especially if the rookie that they took is good, than what we've got in Buffalo and what the Jets have got in New York. So they could actually be the best of the kind of
Rex Ryan. Yeah, I mean, I can agree to that. That's true.
So I think that's a really beneficial thing they've got there. But I hate doing this to the Browns, but I think the Steelers and the Bengals and the Ravens, they can all play defense too, but they've got quarterbacks that have proven
the
they can take teams.
The offense has so much further to go for the Browns.
They've taken teams to the postseason. You know, Andy Dalton's did it 3 years in a row. Flacco did it 5 years in a row. Ben's won 2 Super Bowls. You know, these guys, they're not Peyton Manning, they're not Tom Brady, but they've got credentials that the Browns just don't have yet. And it'll be exciting to see what Manziel does this year.
If he even starts for them, we don't even know at this point.
If he even starts, because Hoyer showed some good things in the past before he got injured last year, but this is a different scheme and all that. So it's all craziness. So that's I'm going with the Steelers and the Bengals to round out my playoff field. Now, we've got 6 teams each. We have to decide who's going to be our AFC champion. So, who would like to go first?
Is anybody going to not say the Colts? Because, at this point, what are they, with the rules enforcing as they are, is Peyton Manning going to throw 97 touchdowns?
You mean the Broncos.
Sorry, that's Colts, the 40 years. All those years.
It's a long time to get used to something.
Yeah, I mean, at what point do you...
I tell you now, I mean, it's interesting because now we're getting down to the nitty-gritty. We could talk a bit more about the Patriots and the Colts, right?
Yeah, that's the question is, can New England beat Denver? Probably, because
we were thinking about this last year, and as we said, it's probably going to be Manning versus Brady, and it was, and it's difficult to escape that feeling this time.
But and last year we didn't know if Manning had a neck.
He was still only 1 year removed from the surgery, so he didn't know. He's like, he might get better, which I think he did in terms of productivity, but he didn't know that. He didn't know how long that was going to be. So, but what we've also seen with Patriots and the Broncos is this kind of arms race that they've got going on about improving the pass defense. It's like, well, the Broncos get Aqib Talib, so the Patriots get Darrell Revis. It feels so much like a bit like what's going with in baseball with the whole A's and the Tigers, except they're not leading in their divisions anymore.
The
comparison just kind of falls apart at that point. But it feels like it's so destined for them to be in the championship game. I do like some of these teams that can actually play a bit of defense in the AFC, but I can't see them upsetting the balance, because the fact of the matter is that the Broncos had a good defense 2 years ago, didn't have such a good one last year, and maybe they could get back to it this time. I feel like that they've got the personnel, also bringing in Ware over from Dallas. If he's got something left in the tank, the pass rush could be quite formidable. And then New England, I mean, it's ridiculous to me that it's been 10 years since they won a Super Bowl, and in that time they've so seldom had a good defense when Bill Belichick is coaching the team.
I mean, they've had some particularly bad defenses.
Yes.
No, it's crazy. But at the same time, he is still Bill Belichick, and I think the personnel is getting better. I mean, you get Brandon Browner coming over from Seattle and Darrell Reed. That is a major upgrade of the secondary.
Yep.
The run defense is a bit of a concern, because last year they lost Will Fork to injury, and that kind of sank the run defense out. They've re-signed him. He's coming back, but he's still as old as he is, coming off a major injury. I am a bit concerned about the run defense, if the pass offense gets back to where it should be after last year's anomaly with just random people playing receiver and didn't know what they were doing, and it was ugly at times. Yeah. It's not something you expect from New England. That isn't going to happen again. And if they're putting up points on everybody with the new rule emphasis and all that, the run defense is going to get a wide berth anyway, right. isn't it? You know, it's not going to be put to the test yep. as much, so I'm not as concerned about it.
I mean, yeah. your now, argument, if you want
to say... Ridley seems to be fumbling a bit.
Oh, he's got issues. I mean, they've got, issues. Pretty good
he's not
run
looking
game.
Rock solid at this, I mean, at this
they've
point
got
in time.
A pretty good run game compared to previous Patriot teams, but that fumbler is a real problem.
I mean, yeah. he's not Lawrence Maroney, but yeah, I mean, he does have some fumbling problems. Yeah. I mean, if you want to make an argument against the Colts, it's you say, well, the Seahawks exposed how to beat them, but the Seahawks are such an anomaly on what their defense is. I just don't know
well,
if there's
yeah.
another team out there.
The
who
other
can
thing
do
I would
that.
Say about the Seahawks Broncos situation is this. People forget this about the Broncos, but they lost their stud, you know, huge contract left tackle, Ryan Clady, about halfway through last season. And, you know, it doesn't get focused on that much because they kept ripping everybody up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But the fact is they kept doing that against the crappy defenses that we talked about. You know, they weren't put to the test. And that is where, you know, you needed that premier pass protector so that you could face up against the defensive front like Seattle and not be in the position they were in. I think that's the thing, is that they had a weakness there through injury that just wasn't exposed until the Super Bowl. This year, as we said, they are going to be playing many tougher defenses during the regular season, including Seattle, you know, in a rematch. But I think that at least if Clady's back and he's healthy, they will be also better equipped to deal with it this time.
Yeah, and I don't know that there's another defense out there like Seattle.
No, I mean, it was dominant. I mean, what they were doing last year, if you track the statistics and stuff, it was actually favourable with some of the real great defences, you know, relative to the time. You know, certainly compared to the 2002 Bucks that won the Super Bowl off the back of their defence, all that, compared very well, which when you consider the way things are now, the bias towards offence, I think is incredibly impressive.
Yep.
So they are something unto themselves, perhaps, and maybe they won't even be that good anymore, especially with the rules. But for me, the only thing I could say against the Patriots is, because it's a remarkable that they won 12 games with such upheaval, you know, the Hernandez going to prison and Gronkowski's injury and Welker going and Amendola couldn't stay healthy because he's never been healthy apparently.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they had all these problems yet they still won 12 games. I think, you know, you can't bet against that kind of consistency, and they look like they should be better this year. The only thing I'd say is that they do have a legend retiring from their coaching staff. The line coach, Dante Scarnecchia, the offensive line coach, had been there for decades and had been the offensive line coach all the way through Bill Belichick's reign. And, you know, the personnel changed a lot and all that, but they always generally protected Brady well, apart from, you know, certain games like the Super Bowl against the Giants. But, you know, in general, they were pretty good. I just, sometimes those things can be bigger than you might think. You know, that they're not as well drilled, and if the pass protection weren't as good, it'd be a problem for them because they depend on Brady so much, mm-hmm. and he's not mobile at all. But I don't see it being a dramatic drop-off. So in fact, as much as it pains me to say this, I think because Denver has a tougher schedule this year, I don't think they'll be the number one seed, and therefore I think the Patriots will win the AFC.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, both teams...
Dropping the hammer.
I think both teams probably have a harder schedule than they did last year.
That's possible, but I think Denver's the one that's a more the step increase, the sharp, yeah. like, welcome to a world where defense actually exists, if it does still exist.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you're right there. I think if the Patriots end up with the number one seed, I just don't know that Peyton Manning goes to Foxborough.
It's not gone well in the past a lot of the time, especially in the playoffs. I mean, it was a long time ago now with a completely different team and all that. But you know, like I think it's critical who hosts that game, and I think New England will probably end up hosting that game and will probably win it. That's how I feel about it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I've seen Peyton Manning play pretty terrible in some pretty big games. I've never really thought of him as a big game quarterback. He's a regular season kind of.
I always think it is in part because Manning is so good at elevating teams that aren't actually that great.
Yeah.
You know, yep. And then when you play a really good team, especially if it's on the road or just in a neutral site like the Super Bowl, that gets exposed as much as anything. Not, you know, and that you know, Peyton has been papered over the cracks.
I mean, if you put him...
I mean, that happened to the Patriots last year, to be fair, as well, didn't it? You know, they won 12 games, but when they went to Denver, I mean, it was pretty much
if you put him on that Tebow Denver team. That team was...
Yeah, they had the better defense then. That's the vexing thing, is that the defense has fallen off a bit. But
that team wins the Super Bowl, in my mind.
No, the level that defense was playing at was very, very high. And I don't think it's out of the question that they could get back to something closer to that. And if they did, then you've got an argument, I think, to say Denver would be the...
I mean, if they did, I think Denver's running game becomes more important, because I don't think they're going to have him... I think part of him going to... I'm going to score 100,000 points this year was in part because... It was kind of like, I'm back. No, I'm really fucking back. Like,
there's 7 touchdowns in the first game of the season against the Super Bowl champions.
At some point, they probably should have pulled him and said, okay, we don't want to hurt your neck. But no, he just kept throwing touchdowns.
Yeah.
Like, there was a certain amount of dick waving in the amount of touchdowns they scored last year.
I think that's a fair point. But now, you know, if you want to talk about that kind of stuff, pride and the... It's not much more to come wound than the sort of embarrassment that they suffered in the Super Bowl. So, I mean, you've got to think that they're going to be a team on a mission.
Yeah.
But I just don't think that they are quite good enough as a team to overcome the fact that that NFC West this year is going to be very difficult for them to get wins out of those games, you know. And so I just think it's fine margins, and this year the pendulum swings to New England. But can we get a verdict from you?
I mean, I already gave mine. I thought I really think that they've got to win. I think Denver's got to win this right now.
Okay, so Denver for James, John?
I'm picking Denver. I'm not going against them.
I could
see them losing, but I felt the same way last year. I mean, really, all through, like, even when they were putting up those huge numbers, I was always, I mean, all the way through, I was like, I just don't believe in this team. There was just something about that Broncos team that I was just like, everything
they just
looks good.
Score 11 touchdowns, but I don't believe in them.
But there was just something where it's just like, okay, that's cool against Jacksonville, but
it was, I mean, there was some some alarming games. Well, they very nearly lost to Dallas, and Dallas had a terrible defense. I mean, if Denver had played any kind of defense in that game, it would have been a blowout.
Yeah.
I think that was kind of the canary in the coal mine for me that just said, I don't know whether this defense is going to be enough when the offense is not just steamrolling teams. And that ultimately proved to be the case, because for as much as we all remember, you know, all the pain that the Seattle defense inflicted on Denver in that game, another key element of it was the fact that Seattle sustained drives.
Right.
They didn't necessarily weren't punching it in, but Russell Wilson was converting third downs, and so Seattle would have a long drive, and then they'd go out and smack Denver in the mouth, and then we'd come right back to Seattle having another long drive. Now, if on the other hand you were, if Denver's defense was good enough to get Seattle off the field quicker and give Denver's offense more chance to get in rhythm, it could have been a different story, and I think that was the thing that really kind of cemented for me that they might not be able to be good enough against the best of the best.
It's very much an offense predicated on wearing out the corners of the other team. Like, it just attack them constantly and let them get, and the safeties too, attack them constantly and let them get worn out. The one thing I give Denver the advantage over the Patriots, though, is that the Patriots offense at this point has become very much this, you know, 5-yard pass machine. And you only have to break up 2 of those to deny the first down. Whereas it feels like Denver is still capable of these home run shots.
I do like the so-called skill position players better at Denver. I mean, I think New England, it won't be the chaos that it was last year.
God,
it's still not historically strong, you know, compared to, obviously, you know, when they had Moss and Welker and all, you know, it's not going to be that good. You know, Hernandez is obviously still out of the picture. Gronkowski's health is still a factor, you know. So it's not overwhelming for me. But the thing is, apart from the fumbling element, I do like their running game. And I think they're going to have a good defense. I just can't imagine that a Bill Belichick coach team that finally has some pieces on the secondary is not going to be able to put together a pretty good defense.
I agree. Their defense has been surprising. If you look back historically,
I think it's past due that they put a decent defense out there. You know, probably been since about the back end of the 2005 season, which is just mind-boggling that you know, when you think about who Belichick is, you know, like that. But certainly to people of my age that remember him as the coordinator of the Giants defense or the coach of the Browns, you know, it's mind-boggling, really. So we've got two for Denver and one for New England.
I think we're all in the same place. Like, all right, those are the two obvious ones.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the Broncos.
I would love it.
The Broncos cannot allow points like they allowed last season.
They've got to be better. I think they might be a bit better, but it's just are they better enough? I mean, the one thing I would say is there are a lot of teams in the AFC that can play a bit of defense, and it's a question whether the offense can break through. I would love it if one of those teams, whether it's, you know, something like the Jets with Geno, obviously the Bills with EJ is a given, but, you know, somebody like that could really break through into the stratosphere, you know, and actually play a bit of defense and all that kind of stuff. But it's just there's just not enough there right now for me to back any one of those teams. But there's enough of them to think that maybe one will get into that upper echelon of teams, but I just couldn't pick which one it would be.
Yeah, I mean, we could be totally blown out by two teams in this division. I mean, we've talked about these teams that could do it in this conference, rather. But
yeah,
none of them jump out and you go, that's the one I'll put my hat on. Because there's this tier of teams below Denver and below New England where you're like, yeah, they're good, but how good are they? And there's
no, and you just can't compete, especially in this environment, with the proven quarterback.
Right.
That's just what you really, really can't really argue against. Because like I said, in these circumstances with the rules emphasis stuff, history shows the rich get richer. So it's just really tough to pick against those people. It's just kind of which one of them is going to do the business. But now we've got our AFC winner. And so it's going to be then the next part of the show. We'll have to choose who they're going to play against from the undoubtedly superior conference of the NFC. So join us after this break for that.
Hey everybody, it's James. As you probably know if you're listening to this, and in fact, if you know this much, you probably shouldn't be listening to this, the NFL has two divisions, the AFC and the NFC. The last 2 hours of bullshit just covers the AFC, and we decided that it's probably best to not put together a four-hour podcast and instead release two-hour podcasts. So right now, if you're listening to this, you can go ahead and check NintendoWorldReport.com or check the RFN RSS feed and find the part two of this where we cover the NFC and eventually our Super Bowl champion. If that's not up yet, well, you can go back and listen to this again. Again, we're going to split this in half because it's the right thing to do. Thanks.